in this agenda, which issues that are of most importance that can be dealt with today, and which ones can we prepare on a certain day, maybe this time is agenda.
Okay.
Can we, all members, start identifying issues that are of most importance that we can deal with on the one, we've got understanding of the allocation funds by the department. I should think that's very relevant. Very important to next. Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, you are dealing with resolutions from the previous minute.
Correct.
Which means today we are going to get the report from the department of how did they deal with those resolutions or those questions that we had as a committee. Number one is understanding of the allocation of located funds. And which one else? This is number two.
Chair, I would suggest that we follow this order and stop where we maybe come to an end of the meeting, because seemingly, these issues have been prioritized. When you talk of understanding, it's a very critical issue that we cannot accept as a committee. Then the second one, the access of drinking water to our communities. So I think the order is just there to prioritize these assisting.
Thank you very much. Then I should think about start setting up our system within order, that we can start discussing more issues.
Yes, perhaps what I should mention is that we have also agreed that they are categorized in terms of the officials who are responsible for particular areas. And Mr. Balza is chairing from Pretoria, so he's going to be talking us through the process. Only, yes, the two of us are here to try to facilitate as well, also in case things break or something, so we can continue.
Can you open up the system line?
Can you hear?
Good morning. Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Honorable members.
Honorable members.
Members from
the Department.
Led by the DG, DDG Tande Gambasa, and our colleagues in Pretoria, led by Trevor Balza. Can you hear me, Trevor Balza?
Good morning. Yes, I can hear you loud and clear. I do have quite a large team here with me as well. Thank you very, very much.
Okay, you are welcome.
Okay, you are welcome.
We'll start the writing with you for us here. Now we have agreed that the committee will follow the different questions as they are and their responses, and thereafter we will see the time. When the time does not allow us, then we will pass some other issues. We just follow the questions as they are. Are you comfortable about that?
Can I just ask for some assistance through you, Chair? Babalwa, the sound is not coming through. You're breaking off. So we're just hearing the first part of each word.
Or is it cutting?
Yeah, it's cutting. I trust that you can hear me very clearly.
Yes.
But your voice is coming through very intermittently.
Okay. No, let me... Are you correcting the system?
Yeah. Chair, if I could also, while they're trying to Chair, while they're trying to sort your sound out, if I could just ask, if I could just ask from your side, the cups and saucers with their teaspoons, every time they lift it and put back, makes quite a noise on this side, so we miss some of your talking. So if you could just try and help manage that as well from your side.
Thank you very much. Put all your objects down, please. Can you hear me, sir? Hello?
I can hear you now. Yes, yes, I can hear you.
Okay. Then let's proceed with our meeting. We start with the first item. I'll give it to Sandhya Gambasa, an acting DG, to lead us in the first item, that is understanding of the allocated funds by the department.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I believe, as Trevor has indicated there, he's got with him a team of people who will be responding to each of the issues. For instance, the very first one, the CFO will be speaking to. Am I right, Trevor?
That's correct. The CFO will deal with the first one.
Yes, carry on, Trevor.
Chair, thank you very much. If I could then hand straight over to the CFO, I hope I'm not talking over you, and the CFO will deal with the resolution on the concern raised being the underspending of the allocated funds by the department, and your resolution being the department should present a plan to the committee on how it intends to avoid underspending and rollover in the future. But Chair, just before getting the CFO to come in, can I confirm that we're going to handle it by branch, or are we going to follow through in terms of the numbered sequence that we were given your resolutions?
Yes, you're welcome.
Yes, you're welcome.
Can you proceed?
Can you proceed?
Chair, I'm really having a problem to hear you. You cut off every time. Babalwa, can you please get the technical staff there at the at Environment to check, see why I'm not getting the sound properly?
Okay,
I don't know whether the mic is, the mic might be placed in the wrong place.
Okay, thank you. We'll
okay, thank you.
Can you check with okay, Trev, the IT person is on the way coming on the side.
Okay, Chair, then I will hand over to CFO to deal with the first item if I could. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair and honorable members. I hope you can hear me. The resolution you took about a plan to avoid the underspending and rollover of allocated funds is the one that I'm going to speak to. The plan of the department, as we see from our side, after the engagement we had in April, was to reconsider what we call a zero-based budget that fixed at the chief director level, including the branches, within the branches, in order to highlight areas of underspending, especially or possible potential underspending for this year. Now, what that entailed briefly was to ensure that the activities that are in the business plan of the individual chief directorate are well costed, and indeed they have adequate resourcing within the current year. And where they did not have adequate resourcing, we came up with a suggestion that that will be the area to engage National Treasury on in terms of the 2011 MTF process. So the involvement of the minister and compilation of zero-based budgets, which led to the highlighting of areas of potential underspending, is one of the exercises we undertook as part of our overall plan in trying to address that. And where we have identified that there will be slow spending, and the DG is able to handle it, or the accounting office is able to reallocate those funds, already we have done that, and we are in the process of ensuring that the accounting officer reallocates the savings that we have already identified thus far. Now, the other activity we are going to do is a review of expenditure on a monthly basis to determine areas of over or under expenditure, but we are not entertaining over expenditure. Neither we encouraging under expenditure by using what we refer to as in-year monitoring reports. These are reports we share with the National Treasury as per the PFMA, and we also share the same reports with the Minister with the clear explanatory notes that indicate what the managers that own those budgets will have indicated to us to be the reasons for the under expenditure. And where there is under expenditure, obviously, by media, it will be our humble and our dedicated suggestion that then at that stage the funds will have to be reallocated. Now, every chief director, in that particular spirit, every chief director and every branch will be assigned what we call a budget controller to assist them to interpret the expenditure reports in respect of their relevant chief directorates, and especially the reports that are submitted to EXCO, which is also chaired by the minister on a monthly basis. During this particular exercise, of course, the chief directors and other managers will then be called upon to indicate what they are doing about the savings or the underspending in a particular area in order for the accounting officer to take the appropriate action. Now, linked to that is the question of the media review. For the last 3 years, we have been preparing the what we call interim financial statements. And in that particular regard, we will use that particular interim financial statement to form the basis for the media review, which is a six-month review of our expenditure outcome up to the 30th of September. Now, this is a meeting we will call upon the accounting officer to chair, and it will be informed by the engagement between the finance team and the line function, so that we monitor the expenditure. The underperforming areas or underperforming projects will therefore require the DG at that particular time to reallocate any earmarked funding to other deserving areas before November, so that those particular funds can be used. Now, you'll notice that in terms of project capital expenditure, we are already monitoring the expenditure on those projects. We are required to report on them every quarter, and therefore, areas where we have identified low spending, we have already communicated to National Treasury in order to reschedule some of the funding on those projects to other projects that are in dire need of funding to complete. So those ones have already been identified under the chairmanship of the chairmanship of the minister in the month of June, where we identified those capital projects that are likely to go ahead as planned, and therefore we have communicated that information to National Treasury to permit the reallocation of those funding. Now, regions will be visited by the teams from head office, because that's where service delivery occurs, in order to follow up on the execution of the projects and to find out whether the contracts, the major service providers, have submitted in the invoice and to process those particular invoices. Linked to those particular visits, Chair, is a question of previously managers had difficulties in using their variance analysis reports because there was a misallocation of expenditure. What we are doing currently, we have what we call a trial balance analysis, where we will be analyzing, and we have done that for the last 4 months, where we analyze monthly the trial balance to see how the expenditure has been allocated, so that the managers have more reliable information to know whether they are spending according to the plan or not. And in that respect, the budget controllers, we have created a position of budget controllers that will inform and take through the relevant chief directorates through their budgets and their budget variances, so that any underspending can then be addressed at that particular level on a monthly basis. Now, you may recall, Chair, in the year that has just been, in the year that ended on 31st March 2010, the source of underspending was mainly on the compensation of employees. Now, that particular area of underspending, the managers themselves who own the organizational structure and the vacancies in their area have already been requested to embark on an active recruitment drive to ensure that those particular positions are used and the relevant COE budget is therefore utilized. If the compensation of employees is unlikely to be utilized during the mid-year review, that particular funding will then be reallocated to other deserving projects, so that by February February, the money should already have been committed and the invoices should be ready for payment. And in that particular line, therefore, we are saying, in that way, the compensation of employees' understanding should be something that we should be talking of to be drastically minimized if the managers, therefore, fill their positions. You may have seen in the press in the recent weeks, a lot of adverts that have gone out to ensure that the key positions that enable us to deliver are indeed filled according to plan. Now, a key contributor to our understanding also, Chair, if you recall our discussion in April, was in terms of the delay in processing of invoices. That's an area, from a process point of view, is an area we want to streamline. We have already done that with our major key supplier on a fleet solution for transportation, and in that case, therefore, the delivery of the invoices, if they're delivered in time, we should therefore not be having unpaid invoices at the end of the year as it has been when that particular contract started. So the monitoring of the payment of invoices for the key suppliers, we have dedicated task teams, like for those particular, for the outsourced IT function, I'm with the CIO, and for the case of the Pakiza contract, we have already a dedicated team that works on that one monthly to ensure that the invoice delivery and processing is monitored on a regular basis to mitigate against underspending at the end of the year. With that one, that is my story, Chair, and I thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
CFO. Honorable members, that is the report now. I don't know whether we reflect on the report given or we take another presentation before. Can you advise me? Can you take another report, then we'll couple them while we...
Yeah, I fully concur with the notion of taking another report because this is not a big report. It's just a little information that we can be able to to engage it with. Two or more presenters. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for a presentation from CFO at Pretoria. Honorable Trev. Hello, Trev. Hello, Trev.
I'm with you, Chief.
Can we take another presentation, which is for access to drinking water? Then we'll debate them later.
Okay, Chairperson, if I could I think that's going to be the leading will be from Tandeka on your side. And then from our side here, we have got representatives from Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and the Eastern Cape who will be able to help to supplement on the report. And I've also got the representative from the Regional Bulk Infrastructure Grants Program. So they will supplement and come in as and when Metondeka Mbasa requires them to. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Beth.
Thank you very much.
Let me give it to the acting DG.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. Trevor, through you, Chair. Trevor, what I would like to do, I would like to speak to, in generic terms, about the issues related to lack of access. And then I'm going to request each regional head to speak to the report and provide more detail, even more detail than what has been prepared here. Chair, if that's okay with you, can I proceed in that manner? Okay. First of all, I think if you're looking at the whole issue around lack of access, one will be looking at two issues. The first one speaks to lack of access due to infrastructure and the fact that these communities that don't have water have not been provided with the infrastructure. And the second one would be lack of access due to the drought period that these three provinces that we're talking about have experienced. And Chair, if you allow me, I would like to start with a lack of access due to lack of services. As we know, we're working towards 2040, which is the MDG, the target is by the time all communities should be having water. The department, the lead department, which is the Department of Minister Shigega, is very concerned about this, and we have been working with them to put in place mechanisms that will accelerate delivery of services. There are three main pillars of that fall under this strategy. First of all, many of you are aware of the local government turnaround strategy, which is a strategy that was informed by the review that the Department of Minister Shikaga did, looking at the state of municipalities and their ability to deliver on services. Under this turnaround strategy, we as a department, and we have been playing a very instrumental role in shaping that strategy, because we believe it's a great opportunity for us as a department to address, or rather to make sure that issues related to water and the management of the service itself are addressed. So from a departmental point of view, we have identified three priorities. The first one would be water conservation and water demand management. And the second one is operation and maintenance of infrastructure. As we know that infrastructure throughout the country, in many parts of the country, is falling apart due to proper maintenance. And the third one is, we refer to it as professionalism, but basically what we're saying is we need to address the skill shortages at local government level and make sure that the people who are given the responsibility to manage water services at local government level have the necessary skills. So those are our three top priorities, and we're working with COCTA to make sure that there's delivery in these areas. We've also worked with them to identify municipalities that we should be from part of the pilot. Another initiative, Chair, that is very important, I believe, that will bring about change on the ground is the establishment of the special purpose vehicle. COCTA has come up with the concept of developing a special purpose vehicle, which is basically an instrument that will enable them to intervene in and provide the service, actually deliver water in municipalities that lack capacity. In conjunction with it, they will definitely have to look at financing models. So at this stage, there's a draft document which we have entered in. There is still consultation with various departments, and it looks like, in principle, it is getting a support from all levels. Treasury had some problems with it initially, but it looks like it will be going ahead. So there will be a special purpose vehicle. They have categorized municipalities that they will be targeting for intervention, and they are still working on the mechanisms now of finalizing the special purpose vehicle. What we like from the department side, Chair, about the special purpose vehicle is the fact that it's looking at the value chain, the total value chain of water. As a department, we've been very concerned about the focus on putting in new infrastructure without paying attention and allocating resources to ensuring that the infrastructure is properly maintained. So this special purpose vehicle, for once, is looking at it. And we will try by all means to take advantage and make sure that other issues like water conservation, water demand management are also taken into account. Drinking water quality, inevitably, if infrastructure is properly operated, there should be an improvement in that regard as well. So we're happy with that. Another initiative that's interesting from COCTA's side, and it's a good thing that these things are being led from COCTA, because it's really COCTA's responsibility. Ours is to support and for them to create an enabling environment for us for our support intervention. The other one is business adopt a municipality. Basically, what COCTA is saying is they would like to bring in, they're looking at creative ways of bringing in the private sector in each locality to partner with them and get support in terms of service delivery. Not much has happened, I'm afraid, in this area, but it's also it can be a very groundbreaking a mechanism if it is well driven. So at that level, we are hoping that if these interventions are supported not only by us as a department but by other departments as well, they will go a long way in accelerating service delivery. the issue of operation and maintenance of infrastructure is also receiving attention at last. We have together worked with COCTA and put in place a bid to National Treasury that's basically going to ensure that there will be allocation, or rather maybe special allocation, whether it's built into other grants or it's a special allocation, but it will address operation and maintenance of infrastructure. You will recall that in the past there was very little money that was allocated for O&M, and it was made part of the equitable share, and municipalities really didn't, not all of them, most of them didn't use that percentage of equitable share towards operation and maintenance. Now, Chair, coming back to the second aspect, where lack of access was disrupted due to drought, I'll first like to talk about the experience of drought and be open about some of the challenges that we have experienced and the lessons that we have learned and how we're going to move forward. First of all, when these provinces were hit by drought, it became very apparent that there was lack of clarity on roles and responsibilities between ourselves as a department, what our role is supposed to be, the role of COCTAM, the role of National Treasury, and the role of the provinces and the municipalities. So in essence, when these provinces were hit by drought, there was some delays, inefficiency, because we were not sure exactly who was supposed to do what. For instance, in the Eastern Cape, our minister declared drought. And according to the legislation, she's not supposed to do that. However, it happened, and we had to do damage control going forward. So we sat down and reflected on how we're going to address this going forward. The Western Cape, we learned some very interesting lessons from the Western Cape, so much that I took the team from the Western Cape to the Eastern Cape to share with the lessons. Because all of a sudden, Eastern Cape was also doing some work, but in a short space of time, Western Cape was allocated 141 million, and we just couldn't understand, and we got to learn that the provincial treasury played a key role. They took leadership upon themselves. Our department and the municipality worked together to put a bid to treasury, and as a result, there was efficiency and money was allocated. So those are some of the lessons that we learned. However, we also picked up that there weren't any business processes. When there's drought, who declares, first of all? What would be the role of the province, the gazetting and everything else? What would be the role of Minister Shikweka, and what our role would be? So there's a need to develop business processes. That is what we're currently doing. But Chair, going forward, or maybe the regional health will talk about what happened, but ultimately we managed to get funding for all the provinces, even though it was hardly enough. There were some challenges, especially in the Eastern Cape, where allocations were not what we had put in. So that really created some problems, but the regional health will speak to those. So in as far as drought is concerned, Chair, there's a lot of work that we need to do as a department going forward. There is no doubt that we have to take the leadership role when it comes, because this is really about water resources. So we will be looking at clarity, making sure that there's clarity when it comes to roles and responsibilities, there are clear business processes, and that there is proper management. But more importantly, we know that we're likely to get into the same problems again next year. So it's about being proactive. How do we utilize our information monitoring systems to anticipate drought and to make sure that when it happens, ultimately, we don't start afresh with processes? That will be our way moving forward. So let me hand over to the regional head and ask the first province here, the Eastern Cape, to indicate what mechanisms have been put in place. Ashley?
Thank you very much, Tishy. Honourable Mr. Dreff,
Hello, Mr. Trev? Hello, Mr. Trev?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay, I'm going to hand over to Ashley Starkey,
okay,
who will deal with the input from the Eastern Cape.
Thank you.
Good morning, honourable members and colleagues. My name is Ashley Starkey. I'm the acting chief director in Eastern Cape. I think DDG has covered a lot of the broad interventions that has taken place. But just to deal with the issues of how we're dealing with water shortages in the Eastern Cape, I think we need to recognize that we are in a drought situation. South African Weather Services has confirmed that we're in about the fourth year of a drought. And as DDG has indicated, our minister has declared all six district municipalities, which are basically the water service authorities, as well as the metropolitan municipality, that's Nelson Mandela Bay, as a drought disaster area. The current situation is that the dam levels in terms of water management area 12, which is the eastern side, the if you can think of the ex-Transkei side, the dam levels are sitting at about 71%. But on the western side, which is water management area 15, our dam levels are sitting at around 31% and dropping. And that is where the most the critical part of the drought has been experienced. Chairperson, recognizing that the provision of water services falls within the water service authorities, we as water authorities have provided the following support. As DDG indicated, the drought is really causing major water shortages in the Eastern Cape. We've set up a number of drought interventions with the province, with COGTA, and we've established a drought management technical task team. The MEC of local government, MEC Kobana, is being briefed, as well as the Premier has been briefed at Minimac and as well as at the PCF. At this task team, we, in conjunction with COGTA, prepared a consolidated drought relief funding request, which we submitted through COGTA to National Treasury. The initial funding we requested was for around 985 million, and that was based on the short, medium, and long-term requirements. The short-term requirements essentially looked at rainwater harvesting tanks, the water carting, and other immediate emergency mitigation measures. The medium term, we will look at construction of rising mains, drilling of boreholes, etc. And in the long term, they would look at the infrastructure-related issues. But today, just to report on some progress that we've made, is that all six municipalities or water service authorities have submitted business plans. And National Treasury has allocated an amount of 86 million for short-term drought intervention. Apart from that, the department has also, we've also erected approximately 1,400 rainwater harvesting tanks to identify beneficiaries. This we've done in conjunction with local government in the province. I also just need to add that the rainwater harvesting tanks serve two purposes. One is for rainwater harvesting when it does rain. And the second is obviously for the water service authority or the local municipality to provide water in strategic areas for communities. Just as I indicated, Nelson Mandela also has made a request for funding, emergency funding, which has gone through to National Treasury. One of the areas hardest hit in terms of drought is the Ndlambe area, that's the Port Alfred area. The municipal dams are basically dry. Bathurst is, the dams are empty at the moment. So the district municipality, district municipality is in the process of declaring that area as a provincial drought disaster area, and that is in the process at the moment. Further progress in terms of the 86 million that has been allocated by National Treasury, we've made the first tranche payment to the various district municipalities, and the report you have is that and this is for short-term emergency interventions. Owas Tambo received an amount of 5 million. Jonkwabe received 3 million. Kakadu received 3.2 million. Amatola received 6 million. Alfred Nzor, 5.3 million. And Chris Hani, 2 million. The next tranche payments will be made in September and thereafter in January. But that depends on the spending pattern of the various water service authorities. Now, in addition to this funding that we had from National Treasury, The department has made available 11 million for rainwater harvesting tanks, which we met with MEC Kobane the other day to look at to identify which areas will be allocated rainwater harvesting tanks. Apart from that, we've also set aside 2.7 million for Ikwezi in the Kriplaat local municipality. The Inlambe area, because of, as I mentioned, the dry drought situation, a further 31 million was made available by Water Affairs to address the short-term needs, and we're presently talking to Amatoro Water to assist them in developing a project plan, which we should have by Friday, and there are a number of interventions like introducing a reverse osmosis plant, etc. Finally, other areas that are severely affected is the Amatoro area, where there's water carting taking place at huge costs. So this drought, funds available from National Treasury is being used for that. DDG, that's the report I'd like to table at this stage. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you from
Can we take
Matopani from the Mbopo?
Sorry, Chair, you're coming and going. Just say that again.
I hear you.
Okay, I'm going to hand over to Elson Matukane from Limpopo to deal with his input, Chairperson. I just want to find him.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, I'll give a briefing on the water situation in Limpopo and what the department is currently undertaking. In Limpopo, most of the dams are over 80%, except Middle Tower Dam and Albasini Dam. Those two dams supply plus minus 800,000 people. What the department is doing currently, because the water shortages are not only due to drought, but mostly due to lack of bulk infrastructure. And these are some of the activities the department is doing. Between 2007 and 2010, the department has provided not less than 613 million rand. In the current year, we've got 228 million rand for 9 projects, which are bulk in nature. And it's anticipated that further funding will be provided in 2011 and 2012. In addition, the department also, because we do need quick intervention, we've got an accelerated program, which in the current financial year it's 28 million rand, and further funding will be provided in the next financial years to enable the regulation services which the municipalities themselves they've provided, but the bulk is missing. In the area of the Olifant Port, this is Capricorn and Mopani, the department is providing, especially for the Olifant Port, water treatment works, has successfully provided a water purification system, a 60 megaliter per day water purification system. This has made it possible for 2010 to happen in Polokwane without any hiccups. In the Middle Tower system, the department has provided 54 million rands to alleviate the drought, that is to take a water pipeline from Landoni Dam all the way to Giani, a distance of 42 kilometers. However, extra funding has been requested. The province has provided not less than 90 million rand towards that. Even that, we will still be in short of plus minus 100 million rand. And funding is still required. That particular project, the municipality has put on tender, and we should start implementing that. The other measures which we have done is to ensure that the boreholes, or the department has ensured that the 30 million rand is provided for, so that the boreholes in the Giani area are rehabilitated. However, this is a drought area, so the water table is rapidly going down. So we'll continue with that one. Chairperson, the department is also providing water to what we call the 1 meter dam area. The dam is not yet there, but they are busy with the drilling of new boreholes. It's part of the drought area as well. I think I should just also indicate that for the Mumbe area, which is part of Limpopo, currently we have finished the feasibility studies, and we are busy with an EIA, and when that is complete, funding will also be required. Our estimate at this current time is plus 300 million rand for that particular project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Matuka. Can we give it to Mpumalanga?
Okay, I'm going to give you Mpumalanga. I've got Mfanyana Mtombo who's going to deal with that one.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members of Parliament. I think as the report states that Mpumalanga, I think our total backlog in terms of water provision says it's about 230,000 households. And the highest out of that being the Ehlanzeni, contributed by Bushbuck Region Nkomazi local municipality. And the cause of that, other than infrastructure, in Bushbuck Region, the bulk infrastructure challenges that were faced there, whereby we still have to finish the pipeline to Ekenhoek, and also that will be dealing with almost 230,000 people, and also to deal with the Oshani finalization of the Oshani treatment works, which is currently ongoing. In Nkomazi, the challenge there is that if you look at the total capacity of the scheme, the schemes there, if you calculate at 25 liters per person per day, it is just sufficient to supply the people, but you have to take into consideration the socio-economic developments that are happening in those areas, where you find that people now, most of them have built their houses with brick and mortar, and then they put water basins and also waterborne system, which can be using septic tanks. That makes a contribution to the demand of water to the schemes, such that if we calculate now Nkomazi water in terms of the population, if the demand is sitting now at about 85 megaliters, when the schemes are only producing about 50 megaliters in that area, which then gives us a deficit of almost 30 megaliters. What we have done now currently, we are busy then in addressing these challenges with the provincial department led by the MEC of Masu of Human Settlements, whereby we are engaging these municipalities that are showing very serious water shortages, whereby the intervention of exactly the same approach as the ActiveDG was saying in terms of bringing private sector or bringing the water boards to come and assist the municipality in terms of the special purpose we had. We have started with that process, we engaged the municipalities, and I think in very short term we should be concluding those agreements. One of the serious challenges also is the capacity of the municipalities on the ground in terms of water conservation demand management. There are no staff in those communities that manage water. Water is for all, for everyone. Those that can take more, they take more. And this has led to the province even deciding that we have to start looking at introducing the water street water committees that will be able to deal with issues of leakages, issues of unaccounted for water, and also make sure that those that are using a lot of water is metered and they can pay for those services. Now, if you look at the entire province, if you look at Gertsibande and Gangala, Gertsibande, our major challenge is at Albert Luthuli, whereby it's also a former homeland. There's quite a number of small schemes that were constructed there, and the idea there is now start to look at how can we access water from the Vegepoom Dam that will be able to supply the entire area. That is still a study that has to be undertaken to look at what we can do, because the current schemes that we have are taken from the river, and most of the time when we get rain, they get silted, and that causes a lot of shortage to those communities, both in Mpuluzi and also at Mhlazatshe. Now, when we look at Kangala, challenges are sitting at Dr. J.S. Moroka, Tembifile, and also some pockets of areas like Emalahleni, etc., due to expansion. But what we are doing to these areas, we are trying to conclude the agreement of supplying water from the Mthombo Dam and also getting water from the Bronco Spring Dam, whereby there can be one single operator to operate the scheme, taking also into consideration the supply from the Kalinen pipeline, which is augmenting the current supply of the two dams. Now, what we have done as a short term, we managed last year to install Ehlanzeni almost 800 rainwater harvesting tanks to quite a number of households, which is currently now acting as a leverage where there is no water supply at all. What we have done to this, we have done it dual to say it's rainwater harvesting, and also it connects to the system because reticulation is there. Should there be no water for rain, but there is in one day water in the system, it can be able to fill up the tank to a particular level, and we put a ball valve. That will sustain that particular community for almost 3 to 4 weeks without having to depend on other sources. And that's an approach that we are taking as a province, because if you look at the state, we already covered almost 93% of the infrastructure is there, but the infrastructure is not delivering water to some of the issues that I've already mentioned. What we've also done, we also drilled boreholes, almost 34 boreholes in the different areas in the province, and we've installed now almost last year 3 package plants. We're going to install 2 package plants. I think one area of concern was Louisville, where we had quite a number of serious cholera outbreaks, and those people were drinking water from the canal. We've been able to install 2 water package plants there, and those people, as I speak, are drinking potable water from those package plants, including the extension of some areas in Bushwick Ridge, where we installed 2 package plants in the size of 2 megaliters each, and also the area around Matibiti, Leroro, where we have installed a 2 megaliter package plant under the Tabachew municipality. So those were the interventions that the department is currently doing to try and mitigate this current situation. However, we are also working very close with the municipalities to look at how can we leverage some of these MIG funding to try and deal with some of these challenges and the water shortages. And most of these projects that I've spoken to are covered and were covered by the department, and moving forward also, we do have an allocation almost of 2 million rand for rainwater harvesting over and above the 13 million rand that is under the ESIP Accelerated Infrastructure Project that we're going to be doing in the province in the current year. I think for now that will be my submission, Chair.
Thank you very much. Now, honorable members,
yes, sir.
It's time for us to interact with the presentation. Honorable Trevor.
Mr. Trev.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much for the presentation. We are interacting with the presentation now.
Chairperson, could I just interrupt before you start?
Okay.
I don't know what the problem is. The other speakers down there are very clear. We heard Tandeka quite clearly, but you are breaking off. I don't know whether you are a bit remote from the microphone, but your speech breaks off all the time. Can one of my technical staff can just try and help us that side?
Can you hear me, Trev?
I can hear you, but you're still breaking.
I'm still breaking.
Yeah.
It makes the echo.
Can you control this?
I don't know how to control this.
I don't know.
Well, I'm not echo.
Oh, can you just put that, please?
It's
not,
not that.
That's someone recording. That's it. Hello, Trev. Hello, Trev. Can you hear me now?
Chair, I can hear you, but I don't. Just introduce again. Just talk, and let's see how it goes.
Okay. Thank you. Chair, now we are interacting with the presentation that you made. I will take this opportunity and giving to the members so that they can interact with the presentation. Members, over to you. Your hands. I'll start from my Honorable Morgan, Sis Jane, Mezigalala, Lavmore, and Dr. Luyange. Oh, you'll be the last one. Okay. Right, over to you.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I am interested to know whether
Can I interrupt you? Maybe they want to fix up this. Right. Okay. Hello, sir. Can you hear the honourable members when they speak here?
Yes, we can hear. Carry on. I can hear our honourable member Morgan. Yes.
Okay. Carry on.
Okay. Thank you, Acting Chair. Drought is very likely to become more common and more severe under the current expectations of climate change impacts in South Africa. There have been, from what it seems, several time lags and problems with regards to the implementation of drought management plans, although there does seem to be far more resolution and, as you say, various business plans and the like. I would like to know what, in summary, the department has learnt from the implementation and responses that it has made already, and whether standard operating procedures in terms of responses to drought would become the norm. It's vitally important that we respond more timeously when it becomes evident that it is a drought. So there have to be various science, I would assume, has to indicate when we're in that kind of emergency situation, in order to provide the relief both for human consumption and for the agricultural sector, and here I think particularly of the guarantee of food security going forward. So what have you learnt? Can you assure us of standard operating procedures and the breaking of any red tape that may exist so that in the future drought relief is provided speedily, meaningfully, and to the people who need it? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. My question is directed to Mr. Matukana. Mr. Matukana, firstly, I would like to appreciate what Zulamela Municipality is doing of drilling about 20 boreholes as from last month, and they will be rounding up this week, as I'm told. But I'd like to say, next to Malamulele Sasol Garage, there are blue plastic pipes lying there, and there are trenches that are being dug there. Are those trenches the ones that will be transporting, taking water to Giyane, or have you started, or where are those pipes taking water to? Because people around, partly Malamulele and Giyane, they don't have water. So where are those pipes taking water to? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to comment on this one of Limpopo. I just want to emphasize what Honorable Mabuza have already said. Because we visited Limpopo 2 weeks ago, we find this pipe. I'm happy that you said what we have seen. Sometimes you said the project is on process, only to find out that there is a wrong pipe that is lying in the field. So I'm saying today you have said what we have seen when we visited Limpopo. So I'm just asking, when is the people of Giyane going to get water? Because we even went to Nandoni Dam. We find also pipes are lying in the field. So we wanted to know what is are you going to do? Because sometimes it's not that there's no money. You get money, but you take money and buy something that is not going to assist you. And then from Mpumalanga, Chairperson, I had the presenter talks more about water that they are busy doing assisting. But we visited Tabatwen at the, I don't know, is the municipality, somewhere called Koromandel. People were drinking water that are not purified. I want to know what is the provincial doing, because they have, when he presented here, he says they have realized that they scarce skill in the municipality. Meantime, when they are still assisting the municipality to recruit, what are they doing about this place called Koromandel? Because water is there, but people are drinking water that are not purified. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Ms. Yalala. Honorable Ndota, I come to you after. Okay.
Honorable Chairperson, I would like to thank the presentation, though there are legal hitches here and then, but at least you are following it up. Chairperson, it seems we are faced with a huge problem when it comes to the availability of water to our people because of drought and other problems like infrastructures falling apart. And I would just like to know who is really and truly, when the infrastructure falls apart, who is responsible to see to it that does not happen, is it the municipality or, I cannot say the department anyway, but now, because there should be somebody to rescue such situations when they do happen. And I was quite, relieved when I was listening to the acting DG when she says there will be some means, taken just to face the situation of drought. It won't just be a natural thing, oh, unkulunkulu vumile ukuthi kube nesomiso, but now the department is going to do something. That I love that one. Now, coming to the Eastern Cape, I was made to understand that where the former President Nelson Mandela comes from, that is Kunu, there are some divisions. There is a section whereby people are a bit comfortable when it comes to availability of water. And on the other side, not very far, the others are just out. They are struggling. There is just chaos. So I don't know, though I understand there is a little reservoir there which supplies the other section. Good enough. We all know that Eastern Cape is leading. They are the most sufferers. And I don't know why. I'm a bit worried, And going to Mpumalanga, I still want to get it right for my own information because I need to be informed about the Nyaka Dam. Whom does it service? The Nyaka Dam, because I remember there was such a problem by the Bushbuck Ridge people when Nyaka Dam was not supplying water to those people. But I was made to understand that no, now things are fine. Fine. Okay? I think I can stop just there, Chairperson, for now.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Honorable Lovemore.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, all. I have a number of questions, as per usual. To Mr. Ayaya, I'm just concerned about one of the comments that you made. When you mentioned visiting branch heads and regional offices, you actually said there'd been a mix-up with accounts. I presume that's your main account and your trading account, which had made it difficult to monitor expenditure, which is considerably alarming. And I wonder if you can expand on that. And then I have a number of questions on the second presentation. And I'm afraid I'm a little bit cynical about COCTA's role. I sincerely hope, and I really hope that everything that they have in place comes to pass successfully. The business adopter municipality, I must tell you, has fallen apart totally in the Ndlambe municipality. That's where it started. COCTA has taken that idea from Ndlambe. It has fallen apart totally. So, nevertheless, that's just a comment. In terms of drought, in the short term, I hope that, and I'd like to comment on this, and particularly from the Eastern Cape, I suppose, and perhaps from regions generally. In short term, water losses surely must be receiving massive attention. I'm aware until recently, for instance, in Mthatha, that up to 70% of the water was leaking. In Queenstown, we've got two-thirds or one-third of the water that is taken from the dam doesn't reach the town. So surely water losses must be looked at in the short term. COFTA's special purpose vehicle, I'm not understanding. I thought you were talking about some sort of lorry in the beginning, but I'm not quite clear on what the special purpose vehicle is, and it sounds very important. So it's some more clarity on that would be good. I hope that the department is pressurizing COFTA in terms of disaster planning, because disaster planning falls under COFTA. The last that I questioned, there were many towns and numerous provinces, including the Eastern Cape, that did not in fact have a disaster management plan in place. Now that is serious. And I hope that this department is pressurizing COFTA. I understand it isn't your competence. In terms of your role in ensuring proactivity and not allowing a crisis to develop, my personal view, having done a lot of research in the Eastern Cape, is that the crisis that exists is not a crisis of climate. It is a crisis of management. There is a drought. It didn't have to develop into a crisis. I am aware that the Department of Water Affairs, for example, and I must compliment Dr. Cornelius Reuters here, the Department of Water Affairs alerted the Nelson Mandela Bay Municipality to the fact that their dam levels were dropping and they were over-extracting, for which I really, as I say, compliment you and applaud you. And Glanbe got to the point where they were telling their councillors to pray for rain. They got to the point where they were running out of water and they hadn't implemented water restrictions. They hadn't started looking at water losses, etc. They are currently sitting at about 60% water loss, which is massive. So what is the Department of Water Affairs' role in ensuring proactivity in not allowing a crisis to develop? Your liaison with human settlements is very, very important. I was very glad to hear the gentleman from Mpumalanga talking about that. Rainwater harvesting tanks should be mandatory. In every new development, there should be rainwater tanks. Reticulation shouldn't be taking place only when necessary. It should be taking place all the time. The municipality can then just top up with a supplementary supply. So rainwater tanks should be mandatory. The Minister of Human Settlements has answered a parliamentary question by saying that is left up to the community to decide. It shouldn't. So I would like your comment on that. Also in Mpumalanga, it was mentioned, and I'm so glad to hear this officially mentioned, that we are utilizing more water than is available with new developments that take place. And that is also cooperation with the Department of Human Settlements, a very difficult one with a constitutional right of access to water. You might like to comment on that. Just a few more questions. The various alternatives to the traditional supplies of water. Boreholes seem to be the natural default. We just go in and we draw boreholes. Now, we do not understand our groundwater regime, and that has been admitted by the Minister in an answer to a parliamentary question. We do not fully understand our groundwater regime. Local knowledge in many cases is saying, look, our boreholes have dried up, our springs have dried up, and this is not going to work on a sustainable basis, drilling of boreholes, but that is certainly one of the default options. The reverse osmosis is expensive, but I understand that it has to be done. The use of effluent, how well has that been investigated? And I'm interested in fog harvesting. I see that the Deputy Minister launched a fog harvesting project. Now, fog harvesting has been done in the Eastern Cape, although we seem to be having difficulty in getting the municipalities on board there. It certainly is an option. It's not an expensive option. So in terms of the various options that are available to us, including reuse of effluent, which hasn't been done to any great degree, what are we looking at? What are we pressing so that we make sure that our people get water? And then just a very specific question was recently reported in, this is to Mr. Starkey, reported in the Daily Dispatch, I think it was, that the Amatola District Municipality, because of trucking costs, is having to raise their cost of water to 130 rand per kiloliter. Is that going to be happening? Let's leave it there. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Uyanga.
Mamdu
okay. Will come upstairs.
Oh, okay.
The last person will
come. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is actually on the finances as presented by the CFO, and especially on the zero-based budgeting to avoid under expenditure. Chair, I'm not fully convinced that you can actually avoid under expenditure by introducing a zero-based budgeting. Because if you are underspending, on an item that should have been used this financial year, and then in the next financial year, there is no guarantee that the activity that you did not spend on in the previous financial year, it is going to be considered. Because these rollovers were actually addressing issues that were not addressed previously. But I'm stand to be convinced further on this one, because a number of important issues will be thrown away because the zero budgeting will allow you to always start afresh behaviors if you are starting afresh everything. Then the issue on the outstanding payments owing people or institutions for services that have already been rendered. It's immoral, it's unethical. There is a payment cycle that government has actually set these 30 days. There is no need for the chief financial officer to run around this country speaking to the people who are responsible for this other than sanctioning them. I would appreciate a situation whereby the department is committing itself to say if there is a service provider who has submitted all the relevant documents, has not been paid within the 30 days, this is the sanction to the responsible officer. I think the department has to take that route because the department will get into more expenditure which is not directed at service delivery. You can't have a chief financial officer who will be an operational person to do the job that is supposed to be actually done by home bodies that are already there. I mean, a chief financial officer must just crack the whip to those who are not doing their work. He will have our support as the committee. Then, Chair, if one has to engage the presenter from the Eastern Cape, congratulations, Chief, for being in charge of a poor province, especially on the water resources. I hope you will come up with ideas that will assist the process going forward, because we all want to see the rural people getting water. That the issue, by the look of things in the presentation, the remedy that is coming up as strategies to address the issue in the Eastern Cape is more focusing on the acquiring of water resources. Whereas the main problem there is around the decay of infrastructure, the existing infrastructure. You are not referring to people who have actually not been part of that population, they have just come. We are referring to people who have been drinking this water, and all of a sudden the infrastructure does not allow that to continue. So if there is no dedication of an effort that will address these issues of leakages. You know, if you don't have water in Mthatha, you must not expect the department to say there is water in Tsendane, there is water in Mkanduli, there is water in Ingcobo. Mthatha is the economic hub of the other side of the Kai River, of the Transkei, because it is Transkei historically and geographically. So all the municipalities that exist in that part, they are actually, I don't want to say they've been isolated or being segregated for the reason that I don't know. And seemingly there is no dedicated plan to say this is how we are addressing this. The introduction of a steering committee, because that steering committee or whatever forum that will be established to address the problem, those are not new people that were not aware of the problem that has been there. We are not going to take people from Zambia and Zimbabwe to come and address the issue. You will be taking Oluyenge and Oskosana who have been here and who are part of the problem of failing the people of the Eastern Cape to get water. I mean, I don't fully agree. I mean, I'm disappointed to learn that there is nothing that is being said by the department to say, now that the municipalities are failing to provide water, because we have an obligation constitutionally to ensure that there is water provided by those that are supposed to do that, and you are not introducing any legislation that is responding to that. Because these municipalities will never be ready now. In the next 10 years, we won't have municipalities who will be capable, who will have the necessary capacity to provide water. Not unless we are just philosophizing the issue and say there is drought, therefore people must not expect the provision of water to be actually done in a manner that is proper. I mean, there are dams and rivers full of water now, but that water is only beneficial to evil forces, because people are drowning in that water, animals are drowning in that water, and there is cold coming out of that water, and people are dying because of the cold that is coming from that water. You go to Mthatha Dam, you look at the Mthatha River. There has never been a shortage of water in the Mthatha River and the Mthatha Dam. Water has been trapped for a very, very long time. There are Noka dams, there are Lubisi dams in Sofimvaba. Water is just standing still there, but cannot reach the targeted consumers. I mean, if you don't address that, and then, let us get into a conference hall. Let us come up with a forum that is going to look into this program as if we are new, we were in exile. We were in exile when people were drinking this water. We were drinking this water, and the infrastructure just actually stopped doing what was supposed to be done because it is old. And then we don't address that. Instead, we call these workshops and conferences to address the problems that we know. We're spending more on activities that are not addressing the problem. It is not right, and it will never be right, Sla. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member.
Thank you, Chair. You know, listening to the members about the issue of water, I mean, really, we'll all be singing the same song here. You know, in one of the meetings with the department, I said, you know, we need activists that realize that this is the people's government, by the people, for the people. You know, the masses of our people in the rural areas, some of them can't even march. Maybe those in the city, in the township, are able to march and blockade the roads, and then you realize it is serious because there's a TDG or a DG on the way to work. You couldn't reach the work because of the blockade. Those ones are sitting right, you know, in the bundus. Nobody sees them. Nobody hears them. Nobody listens to them. Must they suffer because they are not complaining? Must they suffer? I have asked a question from this department as far back as last year, and I'm going to continue to ask
this question until somebody answers me satisfactorily. Here you are saying, recognizing that the responsibility for the provision of water services falls within the water services authority. You are passing it back. The department is passing it back. Constitutionally and in terms of human rights. Whose responsibility it is? It's yours. Don't pass it back to the authority. What are you doing? We've been sitting here and talking about the very same thing of the shortage of water. You plan all the years. You plan. You never implement anything. People are suffering. They're out there. You know, I once asked you about Umnuma. You know, you don't know anything. Somebody is saying, talking about, you know, the hard hit area by drought. That's not true, sir. Go to Umnuma. Go to those villages. You can't even drive a car there. You will stop in Vatawe. You won't reach there. And then you see the suffering of the people. You are talking about a drought. Those people have not had water even before the drought that you are talking about. In Umuma, go to Kendan, go to Kina, go to Nyameni, go to Koban, go to Mantekeni, go to Jotwin. Those are the villages that are making Umuma. Those people don't have water. Long before the drought that you are talking about. They don't have water. There's been no water there. And I've raised this last year here with this very same department. No one amongst you now who can tell me that you once took a trip. You drove there so that you can see. Because when you are a leader, you go and see for the first hand yourself exactly the state of affairs so that you can be understand what people are talking about. That's why the president is all over. So that you can be able to have a first hand of what is happening in the communities. You heard the president talking on the television this past few days to say, I cannot believe that human beings are staying in conditions like these. You will come back and say that you could not believe that there were people really do not have water in the manner that those people don't have water. It's God's grace that some of those people are still surviving without water. I asked a question last year about this water tank. I still want the breakdown even today because I wanted to know which areas have you covered with the water tanks. Because I want to see if Muma has been covered by those water tanks and in Muma, which villages have you given? Because you'll find in all these water tanks that you're talking about that you have given away, none have gone to some of the villages that I'm counting to you now in Muma. None of those tanks would have covered those areas. Tell me now, I want to know, because I've asked you this question, you have not answered it last year.
Are you through? You
know, I am not through. Okay. I'm not through. Okay. I want to know how many dams are there in the Eastern Cape, in the Transkei side. I want the answer now. You are working for this department. You suppose, all these things are supposed to be in your fingertips. Don't want somebody today who's going to tell me you're still going to look for the answer. I want it now. How many dams are there in the Eastern Cape on the Transkei side? Because I want to be able to see how many dams in Matole, how many dams that are there in Nguma, Chris Hani, OR and whatnot, so that you can be able to understand. You know, let me tell you this, guys. Let me tell you this. I think we've been patient enough. We have really been patient enough. Those who do not want to be on the service of the people must quit, because you cannot year in and year out you come in and tell us about the plans that you are doing almost every day, but there is no implementation. People are not receiving anything. I think those people must really quit, because you are the ones who are regarding this, you know making the government to be you know redundant, as if this government is not willing to deliver to the people, because as officials, it's your responsibility to make sure that people are receiving water, people are receiving, you know, all these, you know, services that you're talking about. But you are planning every day. You need to put overall and go down, you know, and understand. I ask a question also about the Umzumbubu Dam. You are talking about the Eastern Cape and you are saying the Transkei site is the one that is hard hit by drought and the shortage of water. I posed a question last week, and I didn't get the answer, satisfactory answer, on the plans to build the Umzimvubu Dam. Plans and everything, I said, were done, and studies and everything. The water, that dam, the studies are sitting at Ninamsha and just up the road. I did say that. That could supply the entire Eastern Cape with water. And I want to know from this department, where is that? Why was that plan abandoned? And we are busy now, want to build a second phase of the Lesotho, you know, Highland Water, leaving our own country here, our own people suffering. We are talking about the second phase in Lesotho. What about that Umzimvubu, you know, dam? Please, we need answers today. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Honorable Members, before I give it to the department to give a response to your questions that you raised here, there are a few things that I want to comment about and ask a few questions thereof. You see, when we meet as a committee, we are not meeting for the sake of meeting just to see each other face to face. We are meeting because there are issues that we are interrogating. There are issues that we are discussing. And at the end of the day, when we come out of the conference room, we want our resolutions to be implemented. That's what we are here for. DJ, we want a response about Nandoni Dam, about Jozini Dam, about Umzimvu. Since last year, even last week, we spoke about these bigger dams. There are problems surrounding these dams. We want to hear from you a progress report of this problem. How far have you gone about this problem? Matukana cannot present about Limpopo and not giving us a proper report about Izimbu, sorry, about Nandoni, if he's the head of Department of Water in Limpopo. I think we need a clarity in these issues. And CFO, you will just briefly tell us, how often will your task team reporting back to you in relation to invoices? When they are going to work, I should think they must bring a feedback to you. How often will they do that? Because we want to avoid this issue of underspending. And the feasibility study of Mutse at Sikukun. DJ, we want a response here. This issue is part of this Nandoni Dam, Jozini Dam, Zimbu. We spoke about this issue since last year. And we can't talk about visibility study all the time. When we meet visibility study, planning visibility study, no, it will give us a problem. Mtambo, Mr. Mtambo, Mpumalanga. Mpumalanga is not Tanzania. Mpumalanga is characterized by four regions. That is Hlanzeni, Gertsbande, Nkangala, and Bushbuckridge. That is Bushabelo. But your report is based to Hlanzeni. All what you have said, you are speaking about Hlanzeni. And you are talking about Dr. J.S. Moroka and Thembisile. There is no such problems in Dr. Moroka. Problems in Dr. Moroka are very minimal and are manageable. The problem is in Thembisile. Thembisile doesn't have a purification plant. Thembisile doesn't have a purification plant. It's getting water from Dr. Moroka. And as it is getting water from Dr. Moroka, it's interjected by the people of Mutse, because there is a pipe that must support Mutse. I should think when you present the report here, you must be specific of which part are you addressing in Moroka and which part are you addressing in Thembisile. And in your discussion, you said you are busy discussing
about issues related to water up with Rand Dam. In fact, Rand Water. Until when are you going to discuss this thing? Because even last year, we talked about the discussion. When will you conclude your discussions? And I want to know the stakeholders that are involved in the discussions. Is yourself alone, or is yourself with the provincial department? If it's yourself with the provincial department, what about the stakeholders on the ground at local municipalities? The district municipalities, they must be part of this matter. So can I take this opportunity, really, DG? We must get responses. We'll start from you, and thereafter we'll go to Pretoria so that members of the department assist in responding in these questions. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to the honourable members for the questions. I would like, Chair, with your permission, to start with an issue that I believe is very fundamental and will remain fundamental: the roles and responsibilities. Our roles as departments and spheres of government are determined firstly by the Constitution and also by the legislation. The Constitution states clearly that the responsibility to provide water services to the people lies with the third sphere of government, which is local government. Just that is the Constitution. It is the role of municipalities to provide water to the community. The Water Services Act, the Municipal Structures Act, and many other pieces of legislation are based on that fundamental principle. As a department, according to the Constitution, our responsibility is to regulate and ensure that that happens. The provision of water happens at local government level. Now, maybe we should talk about what should be our role in ensuring that services are delivered at local government. This comes to the issue of support. The Constitution also requires the department to provide support to this sphere of government to enable them to deliver on their mandate. So that is why, as a department, we place a lot of emphasis on our role to support. Having talked about this in the legislative framework, the provision, or rather the allocation of resources, also follows responsibility. As a department, we do not have money, funding, to actually deliver on services. Even in cases where there is a crisis, and I will make an example, and I'm aware that I'm all over because I'm trying to drive the point home. Even cases where there is a crisis, there's a threat of death, as the case was in the Eastern Cape with those babies, it was difficult for our minister to just jump in there and say to the municipality, you will do this, because the Constitution doesn't allow us to do that. We can only enhance service delivery through our support, which is what we have been doing, providing technical support, advisory services, funding in cases where we do have money. That is the only way, but we cannot take that responsibility for service delivery. It is in this context that the Minister of COGTA has taken upon to himself to put in mechanisms, the SPV, to intervene, because they now have accepted that some municipalities, no matter how much investment is made in providing them with support, they will never be able to provide the services to the people for various reasons. It is for that reason that they have come up with the special purpose vehicle, which I will be speaking to in detail. So I appreciate the frustration of the honorable members here. And maybe it is not enough to say we also have those frustrations. I will make an example. In Delmas, every year Delmas is experiencing problems of cholera. in the last time when it happened, the department actually put in money and provided capital funding to build the treatment works. But what is happening now, it is not being maintained. This year, when our minister had it, there's cholera again in Denmark, people are being hospitalized. She said, it doesn't matter what happens, we will take over. We will take over the operation of that treatment work. It wasn't easy because everyone feels that they have their role. You can't meddle in other people's business. But in this case, the minister felt we have to take over. And there had to be some form of negotiation, something that is clear as it. Clearly, the minister is failing to provide the service, but we had to pull in the provinces and make sure that there's agreement, and that takes time. So I'm just giving you an idea of the delivery environment and the dynamics that come around the roles and responsibilities. It is not easy. Even at high political level, if a certain minister feels that you're meddling in his own business, you know, there are those tensions. But what is key is working together. That will remain key. And that is what government is trying to enhance through the various structures that have been put in place, the performance agreements, the system, the delivery forums. If we are working together, there shouldn't be as such problems. So, Chair, the issue of roles and responsibilities will forever be a problem. Now I'm going to try and go through the questions in the sequence in which they were asked. The frequency of drought and what lessons we have learned as a department. First of all, we have learned and we have to admit, Chair, we have to admit that drought management has not been well institutionalized within the department. When we had the incidents of drought, we had silly debates in the department asking, are we supposed to take the lead? Which division within the department has to do it? And we have now sorted that out. There is an agreement that when it comes to drought, after all, this is about water resources, we have a responsibility to take the lead and provide the leadership to the municipalities. One lesson that we have also learned is that we have to have clear business processes in place. But maybe even before I get to the business processes, the information that we have, what I learned from the Western Cape is that they're working very closely with municipalities. On a daily basis, they provide information about the dam levels. So there is effective hands-on monitoring of water or dam levels, and that information is communicated to the municipalities. So, I suppose it's also about the level of sophistication, because if you go to the Eastern Cape, for instance, municipality, even if you were to provide that information to municipalities, they wouldn't be able to do much about it. So we're saying from our side as a department, we're going to have to enhance our monitoring system, put mechanisms in place to provide information in a structured way to municipalities to enable them to manage drought better. And I must say, it's not happening that well in other provinces. It's only in the Western Cape where it has been happening. So there will be, we will look at proper institutionalization, effective monitoring, and we are currently working on a disaster strategy that will clarify the roles of COPTA and the roles of National Treasury and the provinces. And we will also be making sure that, because the problem is about the release of funding, I'm not sure if from Treasury side, whether they can be able to speed up the process of releasing funding. Mr. Matugane, you will look at the question related specifically to your province, but I would like to speak about availability of infrastructure, which was asked by the honourable member there. Who is responsible for ensuring that infrastructure does not fall apart? Again, it comes to roles and responsibility. In clear terms, that is the responsibility of municipality. And we had a debate in the department about this. There is a feeling that we should leave this to municipalities. But from a regulatory point of view, which would be maybe your interest, from a regulatory point of view, we're responsible. It's in our interest to make sure that all the people are provided with services. So if the infrastructure is not looked into, it means, first of all, people are not getting the service, reliable services. It means our resources will be polluted because the infrastructure, for instance, there will be incidents of spillage and everything else. So it affects us in any event if this infrastructure is not polluted. So what we did in that regard was to develop an asset management strategy from the department side. We're trying to come up with a proactive way of first of all assessing the extent of the need for operation and maintenance. In other words, categorizing which areas are of high risk throughout the country, trying to quantify exactly the level of investment that would be required to address the infrastructure, but also, you know, try to institutionalize the whole notion of operation and maintenance. So in other words, to cut the long story short, it's the responsibility of the municipalities, but we feel we cannot leave it to them. We feel we have to provide leadership, facilitate funding, make sure that they get funding from National Treasury, provide guidelines, and provide technical support where we can. Okay. Eastern Cape, Ashley, please speak to the specific questions that were asked regarding Gunu. And Mpumalanga, I think you will also speak to your own issues, but I would like to come to your point on COCTA's role. COCTA is, I suppose, like many other departments, undergoing some transformation. It has caused a little bit of instability, lack of consistency. You get a manager running with a program. Next month, that manager is no longer there. So, but the currently appointed senior manager, so we hope there will be leadership. The good thing is that there is a realization that they have to provide leadership especially when it comes to addressing service delivery. And more importantly, creating an enabling environment for service delivery. That is why we have the bill that Minister Shikaga is currently driving, that will ensure professionalism, involvement of politicians. You know, those are the things that are very important when it comes to service delivery. It's not only about the infrastructure, it's about the environment itself, how decisions are made, are taken, the role of politicians, issues of corruption, all issues relating to governance, systems and everything else. So we are really working together with COCTA, and we can only hope for the best. The SPV, basically what they have in mind is to centralize the unit that will be made up of specialists, that will have enabling financing models that will enable it to go and deliver services in a municipality. They have categorized municipalities using various categories, really, but basically it's weak municipalities that don't have the capability to deliver on services. It's still maybe the committee through you, Chair, could ask COCTA to come and present this. It's a very interesting concept, and it will address to a great extent, members, your concerns about people who are still not getting water. Because in some cases, I mean, if you look at the level of investment that this government has been making in water, we should have covered much more than we have. But due to problems that we're all aware of, there are some leakages. The impact is not equivalent to the amount of resources that are being invested in. The COCTA's role in disaster planning, we are working on that, and it's going to be addressed in our strategy for disaster management, the strategy that I made reference to. Police, the questions that I'm leaving out, please be aware that you will have to take them. Dwarf's role in being proactive in crisis management, this is very important. I must admit, we haven't really been proactive as a department in as far as drought is concerned. And now that with the lessons that we have learned, we'll be putting in mechanisms that are referred to. One of the key challenges is the management of dams that are owned by municipalities. We have identified that as a problem. Municipalities will drain those dams until they are dry. And it's only when they are dry that they come to the department to say, look, we're having a problem. So I think from our side as a department, even though we were saying initially that is the responsibility of the municipality, we do realize that they don't have the capacity to properly operate dams, especially during periods of drought. That is the case more in the Eastern Cape and I think to some extent in Limpopo. So we will be looking at mechanisms of helping municipalities with management of dams, especially during a drought period. The liaison with the Department of Human Settlement, I think this is a policy issue that we're going to have to look at. Do we want to, I'm not sure to the fundies, maybe water resources people would want to look at what would be the impact of, because remember the river, water in the rivers and dams, etc. depends on the catchment, that's right. So what would be the impact of each house having a rainwater tank? But in principle, even though as a department initially we're saying we're providing these tanks so that people can have gardens, etc., we now realize that actually it's a useful source to promote access to basic water because most communities actually don't have water. That is why, even though it's not our responsibility, we are driving this program and we're actually trying to mobilize funding within the department to make sure that there are rainwater tanks in other areas. Mbanyu will speak to groundwater management. Dr. Luende, I think most of your issues were around finance, but the key issues really around what is happening in the Eastern Cape. Chair, I think this is where you really have to rely on, and we have to look at ways of getting assistance, especially when it comes to political issues. Issues of service delivery in Nakata, most of them emanate from the political environment, especially around Oar Tambo, where the province itself has indicated that it would like to come in and resolve issues between KSD and Oar Tambo, and they have acknowledged that that requires political leadership. But it hasn't really happened. So from our side as a department, we have pulled in the water boards, the two water boards, Umgeni and Amathole Water, to come in and assist. There's a plan that we have developed jointly with Oar Tambo. And we have identified the weaknesses in their approach for services, but exactly what you're saying, that if there's no water in Amthatha, what about the other towns? The fact that people in Port St. John's rely on Amthatha, if a pipe breaks today and there's no service, they have to phone Amthatha and somebody from Amthatha has to be sent to Port St. John's. You know, those are the issues around power, control of resources, etc. that are mainly political. But there are some initiatives that we're working on. Our minister has also intervened in terms of asking the water boards to come in and also at the political level. The province is also intervening. There has been a recent move where two of the municipalities that were falling under Oar Tambo have now been shifted to Alfred Nzo municipalities. I'm not sure if you are aware of it. So those kind of interventions were driven by the province. We're hoping that there will be some improvement. But generally, the Eastern Cape, in terms of service delivery, it is facing problems. It's very much so. The capacity of the municipalities, political issues that we're hoping Minister Shigaika through his bill will be resolved. The issues around Amthatha Dam, for instance, the usage of it, we are discussing that. We're looking at various ways. Actually, you could speak to that. We're looking at various ways of providing water to Qumbu as well, areas of Qumbu where there can't be development because there isn't enough water. The housing development in Qumbu has come to a standstill because we still have to solve the problems of water. I'm hoping that Ashley will be able to speak to about Umuma, and if we don't provide that information now, we will definitely follow up. Rainwater tanks, Babalwa, didn't you provide the committee with this information? Can you repeat it, please, and give it to them?
before we leave. The Umzimvubu Dam, recently the minister called us to wanting progress, and all the dams that you have raised, especially those that are under construction. She was very unhappy with the manner in which we were handling this. She felt that we were not giving it priority, and we were instructed to come up with a plan that will convince not only her but the provincial leadership that we're doing all that we need to do to resolve this. In short, what has happened in Zimbabwe, in around the Zimbabwe Dam? We have sorted out first of all the institutional arrangements. We're bringing in there's a committee that has been formed that will be looking at not only the building of the dam, but how that water will be utilized, which economic activities, because if before we build the dam, we should be sure what investment is likely to come and benefit from the dam, but also what is required, how much water is required to provide whatever form of economic activity. So that has been, the province is now on board. We have sorted out the budget issues. What is required now is to do a feasibility study that will take us to about 2 years. We know that that is not acceptable, but unfortunately, that has to be done when you build it in. We could present a report, Chair. Maybe I should offer to that we will provide a report that tells the committee exactly the plans that have been put in place that will take us to the building of the Umzimvubu Dam. But the budget issues have also been resolved, and there is work that various departments driven by the economic affairs in the province are looking at in terms of economic activities. Colleagues, please respond to issues around Nandoni, Jozini, and the other dams and the other province-specific issues. So let me end there and ask my colleagues to come in.
Thanks, Peter.
I'll just cover the one area that the DDG region has requested me to respond to, which is the one on groundwater. The fact that we do have a national groundwater strategy that is part of our broader planning. I think the one thing that you probably need to look at in terms of the groundwater usage, in the past you would see this, that it hasn't really been used in the same way that we have used surface water. So the whole issue of bringing in groundwater in terms of what we would call conjunctive use, or ensuring that it is assisting maybe even in terms of drought and so on, this has come in very, very big. And it came out with a new policy and legislation that we have. So that is being brought in. And some of the interventions, as you have heard in terms of the presentation, they are actually meant to augment some of the challenges that we have. But we also need to note that because of the nature of the groundwater, we need a lot of information in terms of what is happening, because the occurrence of water, of groundwater, is localized. So it's not the same as the surface water. So we need a lot of that. So detailed studies are also required, also to ensure that you inform the management thereof in terms of construction. It's even more difficult, because at least if it's a dam, you can see that it's running out. But with the groundwater, if you don't monitor properly, it can run out to a point where you have difficulties. So all of those things are very critical, and we are certainly looking at that. And the usage thereof also depends on, you know, people sometimes do not necessarily prefer groundwater, so we've got to manage that as well.
Thank you very much for the response, DG. And We want to give it to members of the department at Pretoria, but DG, before that, about Nandoni, we're told that wrong pipes were bought. Then, as a committee, we said those pipes must be changed. We must go and buy pipes and install those pipes in order to give people water. The progress that we want is in relation with pipes. Those changes. But I should think they will respond as you go. Over to you, Trev, at Pretoria.
Chairperson, thank you. I will immediately hand over to Elson Motukane from Limpopo. From there, we'll go to Eastern Cape, Ashley Starkey, and then to Mpumalanga, Mfanyana and Tamba. And then after that, I'll come to Dr. Cornelius Reuters with regard to Nandoni Dam. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
And Chair, sorry, and at the tail end of that, I will then get the CFO to deal with the finance questions.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you. Elson?
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. Let me just start with the blue pipes between the Sasol garage and the Nandoni Dam. That particular pipe is the pipe which is going to supply Malamulele from Nandoni, or from Nandoni. It's a short piece of pipe, only about 3 kilometers, and that should be finished quite soon. The bigger picture in terms of the pipes which have been purchased and installed, the department has decided to divide the two processes. One, the processes of litigation on the one side, and the processes of replacing the pipes in Nandoni. The current situation is that a new design is being done, and in the present year, we have in the budget 67 million rand to part implement, and then next year 200 million rand, and in the year 2012-2013 another 100 or so. That's how the problems of Nandoni are being addressed. Dr. Reuters will give us more details regarding that. The other problem, which is the motor problem, as I've indicated, we've finished the feasibility study. We are currently doing the design of the water purification works and the pipeline. But the department will only start funding this particular project in the year 2012 in terms of RBIC. The municipality has been requested to budget for the initial cost of the waterworks and other related infrastructure. They've indicated to us that in this particular year, they only have got 1.5 million rands. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Mr. Matuka. Next. Mr. MK, please.
Yeah, I'm going to swing across to Ashley Starkey now. No, other way. Okay. Ashley, carry on talking. I'll get you.
No, that's the wrong way.
Chair, let me start with the question regarding Kuno. As DDG has indicated, there are some developments, but I will most certainly look into it and provide a written report through our DG's office to you within a few days' time, maybe 2 to 3 days' time, ma'am. With regards to the question on alternatives, I think it was Slavmo that mentioned. Yes, the fog harvesting is being considered in the Mount Aleph area. Groundwater is being considered, and in the Kristani area we had a good yield in the off Mayer Middleburg area. But again, the issue of groundwater is something that we would need to encourage in those areas where it is available. With regards to effluent reuse, I think in Alexandra, there is a pilot study that we are working with the Lambe LM to see to look at the reuse of that, and it will be a pilot, but it's still work in progress. With regards to water conservation and demand management, this is one of the issues coupled with drought that we've been really, really trying to communicate to the WSAs. Nelson Mandela Bay, we made an amount of 2 million available. And we know that there was good results with losses at schools and other where we found that Nelson Mandela Bay found that a lot of the water losses originated at schools, and we've got good results. The issue around water losses has been around communication, infrastructure maintenance by WSAs, etc. So yes, it is something that we're working very hard on at the moment. With regards to ADM, the issue of water carting, I mentioned in my presentation is that ADM is carting water to areas like Prince, etc., at huge cost. They have approached us with regards to assistance, and we are considering the request together with local governments. The tariff has not increased. I'm not aware of that, but I can find out for you. With regards to the Amtata area, you know, ironically, my parents live in Amtata, so that's my hometown. Yes, the issue of water leakages is again under water conservation and demand management issue that we've been dealing with. DDG has mentioned that there's a joint task team that has been established to assist the OR Tambo District Municipality, where we've called in Amatola Water and Mgeni Water. And also, just to mention that the KSD Presidential Intervention Project that is in place, DWAF is also participating in that project, whereby we have indicated what funding we bring in and what interventions and support we're providing to KSD. With regard to the question of how many dams there are in the Eastern Cape, I had to do some quick fancy footwork, but we have 589 dams in the Eastern Cape. There are 79 water affairs dams. There are 459 farm dams. There are 39 municipal dams and 12 private dams. Chair, I think those were the questions I had. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair, I'm gonna swing across to Mtambo Fanyona.
Yes, welcome.
I'm going the wrong way again. Just keep talking, Fanyona. Okay, did you know?
Thank you, Chair. I think the first question was to address the issue of Coromandel in the Tabachew. I've made some inquiries. Coromandel is one of the farming areas around that Tabachew municipality. And I know that we have implemented a project in the last previous financial years, but currently we are looking for that information to see which area are these people drinking raw water from the streams. If that is the case, we will try and see, as we have done with the other areas in Tabachew where they were drinking from the streams, where we have installed a package plant. That will be an interim to medium-term solution while they are looking at bulk infrastructure provision for that area, because I know that there are projects in the MEEC project that is are meant to deliver bulk infrastructure in this area. The issue of Inyaka Dam not supplying the people, I think Inyaka Dam currently, that dam is solely supplying the people of Bushbuck Ridge. But the dam currently, we are unable to take the total capacity from the treatment plant due to the bulk pipeline that we still have to construct, the 24-kilometer bulk pipeline. That plant is being envisaged that at the completion of the total works, it will deliver 100 megaliters. Currently, it is at a position that it can deliver 50 megaliters, but we're unable to take the total water of 50 megaliters until that pipeline is completed, we can be able to take. By next year, I think it should be going to 75 megaliters, then the next year, yes, then the full capacity in 2012 will be going to the full capacity of 100 megaliters. Over and above Inyaka Dam, we also have the Oshane scheme, which we have also upgraded through the regional park infrastructure to a 60 megaliter plant. That's the scheme that is due for completion this financial year. So in totality in Bushbuck Ridge, we'll be having a capacity by 2012, you know, starting from this year to 2012, of 160 megaliters supplying that entire area. Mm-hmm. Now, looking at the issue of engaging human settlements in some of these discussions with the municipalities, I think that was a comment from the Honorable Lovemore that, yes, we are driving it with the MEC of Human Settlement. He's the leader of that delegation that we are discussing the issue of how we can intervene in assisting these municipalities. Then the issue of Tembisile vis-a-vis Dr. J.S. Moroka. As we all know that currently Dr. Tembisile is supplied its water from three different sources. One of the sources is Dr. J.S. Moroka, which is the one from Bloemendal, which Honorable Matang was talking about, that is being intercepted by the people of Tubase. And then the second one is the Cullinan pipeline, which is delivering currently 30 megaliters directly to Tembisile. The other one then is the supply from the Bronkhorstspruit, which is Fungwini Treatment Works, that also supply the area of Tembisile. So we have three sources. But what the challenge is currently is that the management of the three sources sometimes is not adequate. It needs one operator that will know how much water goes to Dr. Chess Moroka, how much water goes to Tembisile, how much water goes to Mkungwini. And that is what we are currently grappling with. The question further asked whether who is responsible in driving this process. This process currently is being driven by the MEC of Human Settlements, with the district involved, with the local all local municipalities involved, including Mkungwini under Gauteng, with our provincial office of Gauteng also involved, including the department. We are hoping, because at this point in time, we have already given them the service level agreement, and hopefully in due course, we will be able to sign these agreements, and meaning that we will then have one operator that will be able to do the equitable share among all the municipalities at this point in time. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, I'm going to swing back to Dr. Reuters now. There we go. And just once Dr. Reuters has spoken, I'm going to go to Sibusiso Mthembu before the CFO so that he can just talk to Josini Dam. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. As I said last time, and what last time we were down in Cape Town, and also what Mr. Motokani was saying, that for Nondoni, the amount that Mr. Motokani was referring to, that we have reprioritized that particular amount internally in the department, also from a perspective that we had to delay some of the other projects, and what I said previously, like the King William Dam, that we pushed it back a bit, and also the Wamitwa Dam, so that we can reprioritize the funding so that we can complete Nondoni. And we plan to deliver to Toyando the water towards next year, more or less all the surroundings off Toyando by the end of next year. And then for the whole of the service area with regard to the pipeline, all the communities that we must serve out of Nondoni by the end of 2012. What we're planning, Chairperson, is that we going to lay parallel pipes in terms of the stainless steel pipes, in terms of the amount that was indicated, to make sure that we have a sustainable supply of water surrounding the Nondoni Dam. And then also what the Chief Director of Limpopo was indicated, that there's still a discussion in terms of the supply also from Nondoni down to Kiani that we must also find, that we must still finalize. And lastly, Chairperson, from my side, the issue of the number of dams was communicated by the Chief Director by the Eastern Cape, so I'm not going to go again into that. But I want to conclude to say that the question or the comment that has been made by Honorable Morgan is that we, in terms of the operating of our dams, we have relooked at all our operating rules of all our infrastructure to take into account the issues of climate variability and climate change, to make sure that we look in terms of what is the current demand in South Africa, and also in terms of the supply that we have, so that we must look after the issues of water security and sustainability within South Africa from a perspective of making sure that there's enough water in our infrastructure to supply all the major water users in South Africa, particularly the energy sector, the agriculture sector, and also the industrial sector, and then the domestic, that is basically our primary supply. So we have discussed that. We are in working with the various division within your department to make sure that we take into account the impacts of climate change and variability in terms of the availability and the storage of water within our infrastructure. On that note, I thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'm now going to swing across to Sibusiso. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you want to start? Talk so long, Sibusiso. You're on.
Honourable members, you'll be happy to note that the planning phase for the Chozini project is over. The feasibility and the designs have been completed. We are currently on tender for the actual construction. We are expecting that we'll start the tilling the ground towards the end of this calendar year, after we have received all the tenders from the contractors. The project is estimated over R1 billion, with the secured funding to date of about over 60 million, 61 million in fact, from the local government, Department of Local Government in KZN, as well as 72 million from Regional Bulk Infrastructure Grant of Water Affairs. You can see the discrepancy between the secured funding and the amount that is required to complete the full project. The MIG is also going to be funding the reticulation side of the project through Mkhanyabude DM to the tune of about 36 million. The benefiting households on this scheme once completed is about 6,000 households. The project is due to be completed by 2016. However, we are doing the project in phases, which means the first community to receive water will be by next year, 2011, after I've finished the first two phases of the project. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to bring you back to Mr. Ayaya now in terms of the finance questions.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Chair, and honorable members. I will go straight to the point of clarity from Honorable Normo. When I refer to the regions, I'm not in no way mixing with water trading entity issues, because water trading entity is not affected by the rollovers and underspending. And any money that is not spent on water trading entity is still readily available to us to spend. The regions, when I use the term regions, I'm specifically referring to the nine provinces where we have the nine heads of those particular regions, and those are the ones that I'm referring to. And the reason why we are referring to them, there are certain process issues when we are dealing with underspending that are unique to the regions, and that's why the visits are necessary. When it comes to water trading account, just for point of clarity, Honorable Lamo, we talk of clusters within the water trading entity. We don't talk of regions. Instead, we talk of operational and construction clusters. That's how we are organized in terms of delivery and in terms of financial management in those clusters. Now, Dr. Lienge, Honorable Lienge, I did refer to the zero base. You are right. Zero base does not necessarily lead to does not necessarily enable us to avoid underspending, but what it does is that it helps us, or it has assisted us, to redirect the budget to areas which are underfunded. Now, the reason for that is that there could be a year, for example, when I could, as a CFO in my office, I could have had, let's say, 5 million to enable me to develop finance policies. Now, the fact that I had 5 million last financial year should not necessarily allow me to continue holding on the 5 million. I need to justify it by linking it to the business plan for the relevant year. And that's how the zero base has helped us in terms of identifying areas where there may be potential and expenditure, because the activities that were presumed to be taking place when the funding was allocated may not necessarily be taking place in the current financial year. But you are right that the fact that somebody has done a zero-based budgeting, it will not necessarily mean that they will not underspend. I think that one you are right on in. Now, you have made an observation also, which we note and we agree with you, that is unethical, obviously, to have outstanding payment, but some of outstanding payment, especially for the major key suppliers, and the major key suppliers that have kind of affected us over the years is the outsourced IT contract and the Pacusa contract. The way they have delivered invoices has not been appropriate, and that's why they have a special focus. But the observation made by yourself regarding the reasonability lying squarely on the shoulders of the project managers, it is taken in that spirit and it's a positive one, because for every project we have, there is at least a chief director or a director involved in that project and is the one to certify the deliverables before finance can process the payments. So in that light, therefore, what we are saying is that the peculiarities depending on the cause of the delay in payment, it could be that somebody did an emergency procurement, it would delay a payment, or it could be invoices were not appropriately delivered to the relevant project manager, it could also delay the payment, and therefore those root causes are the ones that inform whatever intervention we plan to undertake. Now, Honorable Skozana, Chair, you alluded to the fact that how are we going to report and all the things in order to avoid the under expenditure? For major accounts, we have monthly meetings. Those monthly meetings, myself and of course other senior managers are involved in that, because we have been carrying certain arrears, certain outstanding invoices of up to 60 to 90 days, which we want to avoid by the time we come to November or December of this particular calendar year. What we have done for the current financial year, we are going to the report from managers. We're expecting it at the end of this month. Of course, our system closes on the 10th, and therefore the entire report should have been concluded by then. And then we'll target 30th of October for managers to account on how they will have spent, because that is the time when we are doing a media review in order to reallocate any funds that are within the discretion of the DG to reallocate within the various priority areas. Now, related to the same timing issue, we are talking of again February. In February, all services rendered in the first, second, and third quarter have not been paid by February, we will obviously have a problem, and therefore there is another report that is expected before the end of February, so that we get to know where the problem areas are. But it has been pointed out, especially on capital projects, there is scheduling of the reallocation of money from slow spending projects to those projects that are already ready for implementation is an exercise that has already been done. What is left is a question of monitoring those particular time interventions that I've already alluded to. And I thank you for listening to me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. I think that's the extent of the responses from us on this end. We await your further instructions.
Thank you very much, Chris, and your staff member. Can I check with members, is there any follow-up questions? But you must be short, because time is up. Yes, Mamo.
Chairperson, they call me Honorable Zogalal. That's my name. I don't want to be called by name or whatever. I'm Honorable Member Zigalala.
Okay,
that's
you.
My name.
Thank you, Honorable Zigalala.
And I would like to thank the department. I was just listening to the one that was giving a report about the Juzini Dam. I have the breakdown. It was very hard for me to get to have that breakdown, and it tallies with what he was saying now. Thank you so much, but I am awaiting the report about Kunu from the Eastern Cape. The report must come, my friend, and I want to thank on behalf of the portfolio committee, I want to congratulate those who are operating from Pretoria today. Oh, they're so nice and bright, you know, away from it all. Thank you.
Honorable Ndote.
Thank you, Chair. I must say that the responses I take really, that I've been I'm really taking that, for me, that's in contempt of my answer, of my question. that I can just be given a blank. I mean, the DDG, just look at the back to say, have you ever not provided the members? I have asked those questions last year, and I never got the answer. I will still ask to say, because I'm looking at your own report, that is saying that you have erected 1,400 rain water tanks, you know, here. And I'm asking just a simple question to say, give me a breakdown. Because I said, I want to understand which villages in Mumuma in particular can receive this. Because I said to you, you are talking of drought. Those people don't have water even before you had drought. I still have, don't have that answer. You referred to say the committee was provided. As the person who asked the question last year, I've not had a written report answer from your department that says, Honorable Ndute, on the question that you have asked, and then you copy other members. So I really take it as a contempt. On the issue of the dam, even on that one, I even though I said I want to know the dam, I don't want Kettle and Peak dam. I'm talking about the dam for human consumption, for people. And in that one, I was even specific because, again, I said, I want to be able to see in that report the picture that will at least will show me that the people that I've referred to, that at least, the people around the Mumuma area, which dam, at least they are supposed to be benefiting water from and that they are not receiving. I'm just told about cattle and sheep and pig dams and all that. I'm talking about specific dams. That's, a human consumption water, and I specific to say the area around Mumuma and Matole, so that I can understand that those people are benefiting from which one. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ndote. Honorable Mangani.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say to the department, next time when we have a baby that doesn't have molars, we mustn't, like other people saying, this is government who have made, given these children rights, now they don't have moral, and blame the government. Everyone have responsibility. When we say support, we mean support. You can't support me when you see me not doing the things that I'm supposed to do, and said I'm still supporting. You have to come with something that says, I've been supporting you until thus far, now I think we will take the steps. I'm going to Master Matugani quickly. You said quite soon it can be after this meeting, quite soon. When you said quite soon, it means when we go out of this meeting, we will get what you said you will be doing. And then the other thing that you say litigation and process going hand in hand, it will go in parallel. What do you mean? Because to me, I think some of the questions, especially from Master Matukan, is just a blanket statement. We want tangible things. When we say Giani, we have seen, we were there. We go first to check what you're telling us here. We know what is happening. You must tell us exactly when you come here. And then planning. I'm happy today you could mention planning. Don't say every time when you come here, you say the thing is in process. When it's in process, we think that you are busy doing something. But when you say you're planning, we will understand that you're still having this chart in the boardroom drawing something. Don't mix process and planning. To me, I take it as if it's two things. Planning is that time. A process is when you are on the ground, hitting the ground. So I think I appreciate, but I don't want us to distance ourselves. This us who give the municipality to be water authority. Municipality doesn't just grab and say we are water authority. It's you say, after searching and seeing and say, these people have now grown up, we can do 1, 2, 3. We must assist, because your failure is our failure. As the chairperson has already said, we don't want to come and sit here and look at the screen and talk. We want to see something happening on the ground. So assist us to see that thing happening, because you are the one who's doing it on the ground. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mangani, before you give responses on these follow-up questions, Mr. Mtambo and Mr. Skosana, not Mr. Mashango. Mr. Mtambo, the supply that Tembisile gets from the Kalinen scheme and Bronco Sprite is inadequate. That part of Gwamhlanga, Tweefontein FG, Pumula, and the like, they are suffering about the shortage of water. Carry on responses from Pretoria on the follow-up questions, please, in brief. Atukwana is one of those. Can you hear me, Trev? Hello?
I'm going to swing across to Mr. Matukani and then Mr. Mtambo and then to the Eastern Cape.
Yes, and come back to me very soon.
You will do. Elson?
Thank you, Chair. I think I must just answer when are we going to start with the Nandoni, let's say, refurbishment. As I've said, at this point in time, the plans are being completed. We hope to start in the next 2 months, which should be October, to replace some of those pipes. That is for the 67 million we spoke about. So I think that is I'm correcting the quite soon process. Thank you.
Mr. Khan, I respond to your question. Sorry, Trev. Hello, Trev.
I'm with you, Chief. Go ahead.
The members cannot hear the response from Matukwana. Can Matukwana repeat?
Okay, I'm going to come back to him. Nelson, talk again, please. Just bring the mic closer to your mouth.
Okay. I think first, regarding the implementation of or the replacement of the glass fiber pipes with other pipes, that also needs a design, and the design should be completed quite soon, and we should start implementing the project in October. And then, just to add on, the blue pipes which are visible from the road between Mavambe and Sasol Garage, that is the pipeline which is currently being constructed to supply Malamulele. It's currently being implemented. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you hear the response that time?
Yes, but inadequate. We'll just get information from the PG for this follow-up question. Can you proceed with another response?
Can I proceed to Mr. Mtambo?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. My apology.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Chair.
My apology to Honorable Skosana. I'm happy that today we're looking bright, but if you look at the screen, you can't really see who's on the mic at this point in time. But the issue with Tweefontein and the supply of water to Tembisile, I just want to bring to the attention of the Honorable Member of Parliament that we are currently supplying the area of Tembisile with 60 megaliters. 30 megaliters is coming from the Kalinen pipeline, 20 megaliters, which sometimes increases to 30 megaliters, is coming from Kungwini, and the one that is supplied from Dr. J.S. Moroka is only 10 megaliters, which makes a total average daily supply of 60 megaliters. Yes, I do know that areas around Tweefontein, we've got problems, but you realize that Tweefontein K is where the Enkel Dwarren reservoirs are. And in the past, we had serious challenges about water leakage and water overflowing from that to those reservoirs, damaging the roads. And I think the other challenge with the municipality is serious, you know, leakages through to the asbestos pipelines that are in the infrastructure there. The municipality is looking around 80 million rand to replace the asbestos pipelines, because that's where most of the water is being lost, and then other areas don't get the water. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you very much.
I'm going to swing across to Mr. Starkey.
Go ahead, please.
Okay, Ashley. Thank you, Chair. With regards to NUMA, according to our report, there have been no rainwater harvesting tanks identified. I just need to state that the identification of the beneficiaries for rainwater harvesting tanks is done in conjunction with local governments and the WSAs. And the 11 million that I spoke about previously, we've met with the MEC to identify. We've identified Amatoli, DM, Nuba, Great Sky, Bashe, etc. So we're doing it in conjunction with local government. So I will most certainly table this one, honourable member. With regards, and we will provide you with a written response with regards to the beneficiaries that have received rainwater harvesting tanks. This is quite an extensive list. Secondly, with regards to the dams for human consumption, Honourable Member, as you indicated, can we provide humbly request that we provide a written report, as I don't have that information with me at the moment, and we will provide it very shortly, Honourable Member. I humbly apologize for that. With regards to Kunu, according to our reports, we're not aware of the two sides that are comfortable and that the others who do not have at this stage. However, as I indicated, I will most certainly send a deploy a team to investigate and to consult with the WSA immediately to find out what is the actual situation on the ground, and I commit to have a written report to you within 3 to 5 days, Honourable Member.
Thank you very much.
Chair, I think we've responded from this end. I don't know whether Matt Tandeka and Basa has any follow-up in terms of the regions. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much for your responses. You are welcome in providing that written report. I'm talking to Starkey from Eastern Cape. If you can give us that report, we'll be very much happy. Honorable members, I should think responses are given, then we proceed to the next part of the report. Now, I want to check with you, Honourable Members. There are summaries here. Part 3 were for the summary. Can you request the presenter to leave this summary? Because it's here, we can see. But they must just give us a report, but leaving the summary. Is that correct?
Yes.
Then number 2. Part 4, the summary here is clear. Part 4, on page 8, this summary is not clear, just to explain it. I don't know whether you are with me, Honorable Member. On page 8, they must explain the summary. But those other summaries, you must just leave them. And also on page 9, the summary must be explained. Mm. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Can we proceed from part 3? 4 to part 5 before we interact with the report.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Fine.
Right. DG, we give you...
Chair, could I just come in from Pretoria quickly if I could? Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, welcome.
Chairperson, having dealt with the Chief Financial Officer, can I release him and his team, and the rest of the team will remain there?
Okay, Trev, thank you very much. We thank the Chief Finance Officer to give us a report and responses. Thank you very much, sir. You are allowed to leave. Trev, can we proceed?
No.
On part 3? Part 3, water pollution and mines operating without licenses. We have got a presenter here, Mr. M. Nomfumbata. Please give us a report.
Chair, sorry, can I just clarify, Chair? The way that I understood this was that we wouldn't only be looking at mines operating with licenses, but we'd be looking without licenses, but we'd be looking at water pollution as well, because that in itself is a massive issue. It seems from what is here is that we're only looking at
it's water
mines.
Pollution and mines operation.
Yes, but if you look at section 3 on page 5, there's nothing about water pollution, it's only mines.
Let's give them a chance so that they present, and thereafter we'll start asking the questions. If they have left something, they must tell us why should they left
okay,
that, because
okay.
We...
All right.
Can you go ahead?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The presentation has indicated, and our interpretation of the question at the time was the issue of clarifying water pollution in mining operating without licenses, noting that about 100 mines in the Gauteng area alone are operating without licenses, resulting into high levels of acid mine drainage and things related. We have indicated the submission on that, and just in terms of the comment that was made earlier, it may have been an oversight, so can you please look at the other part of the question as well. So, currently, our indication is that there are a total of 125 mines currently operating in the whole country without water licenses. Obviously, just the correction of the 100, the numbers that we have are showing about 125. We need to put that in the context that if, for example, an established and functioning mine needs to make changes, some of those changes would require an adjustment for licenses and so on, so that authorizations can also be made to such changes. It is also indicated that the majority of the outstanding licenses. License applications are for approval for the necessary changes as well. So it's not just sort of it's not necessarily new licenses as such. In terms of indicating how this is being addressed, there is an issue of a short-term approach, which we're looking at, and long-term, of course. And short-term issues, we have discussed some of this, but the issue involves issues of analysis of the directives that we have been issued, identifying all the mines that can be indicated as priority mines and so on. And some of these have also been issued in terms of the compliance of these directives. The other issue we stated is the issue of the project listima to deal with the backlog, so to help and clear the backlog that we have had in terms of mining applications. It's happening now. We reported that, and we're scheduling to complete it by the end of the financial year as indicated. We also do have interact with the Chamber of Mines as representing the majority of the mining houses that are actually involved in terms of assisting with some of the submitted applications and so that those can be dealt with. Directives also to those mines, issue directives to mines that are not complying with existing regulations. And I think some of that information has been made available as well. Also, the regional heads, we did speak to the issue of follow-through last time when we presented here. Those things we are actually addressing in terms of ensuring that there is follow-through on the directives that are issued and the necessary steps being taken. And some of the examples the regional heads may also speak to that if necessary. As far as the long-term is concerned, definitely, planning is part of it, and I think it's very clear. We need to put in a turnaround operational plan to ensure that all licenses are dealt with timely and so on. I think we also mentioned last time in the presentation the issue of reporting, the quality of reporting. That is something that we need to improve so that we provide the information at the right time. Technical evaluations in all the investigations by the department. I think we also spoke about the issue of capacity that is required to be built in the, especially in areas of technical and legal capacity within the department to enable the department to handle those kinds of licenses which relate to the mining and so on. the issue of collaborating with other departments. You will see on there that we do refer to the Department of Mineral Resources, working closer with our sister departments in terms of Department of Environmental Affairs, especially around functionality of the environmental and water courts. I think we related on some of the specific activities that are taking place in terms of training of people around those functionalities. Essentially, that's especially on the licensing side, that is the issue. We haven't gone into the details of the water policy in general. Definitely we've covered that.
Thank you. Are there any follow-ups on the response given? I remember, can we go to the next? Are there any follow-ups?
Okay.
Chair, may I just ask what does fast track mean? It's a little concerning that it says the department will fast track those applications. These are for mines that are operating without a water use license, that have applied for the water use license. What does fast track mean?
Can I have a 2 seconds on that? Thank you, Acting Chair. Just in terms of Honourable Lovemore's question, which is a very good one, does fast tracking mean that the department will not give due consideration to all the necessary studies and components that make up issuing a valid water license from a departmental point of view? So, in other words, does fast tracking mean you are going to compromise the process of issuing a water license in terms of all the processes, including the appeal process, which affected users can use?
That was a follow-up question, Chairperson.
Okay.
I can take over.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much, Honourable Members. I think a simple answer there in terms of what needs to go through is no. I don't think we are not talking about going around what needs to be done. It's actually through going through the process. If you look, for example, in terms of what we are doing with the CIMA project, people are working quite extended hours to make sure that everything is done. So there's quite a lot. But as you can understand, in terms of some of the challenges that we have indicated, I don't think you can sustain that kind of working. People do need to ensure that the capacity that is required is there so that all of those things are done. But the intensity is more about intensity of processing rather than short-circuiting or short-cutting the problem.
Thank you. Did follow-up question?
Yes, I was just saying, I just want to emphasize that the issue of engagement with the Department of Mining Minerals, it must happen, because in some area where in the wetland, they already mine, and then there's no license of water. So it means you have to speed up the engagement, because many things are happening, but there's no water license. I appreciate that you said, but I'm saying speed up that engagement. I don't want to hear soon. Speed up.
Through you, Chair, if I may, it is happening to the extent to which even the engagement with in the processing of licensing. Obviously, areas that we have presented, which we still have challenges in terms of the tools, we are working on that as work in progress as well. So it's actually something that is happening.
Are you answered? No?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Chair, may I ask another quick question, please?
Okay.
Chair, the very last sentence on page 5 with respect to mine. One of the major concerns that is raised over and over by people like the Federation for a Sustainable Environment is that water licenses are, for mines particularly, are being issued without proper remedial plans being in place. Remediation plans being in place. Now, here you say
the department will update regulations to ensure mines adequately plan for any pollution emanating from mining operations, which is very pleasing. I might be wrong, but I think you can actually put that in as a condition in your water use license now, but please correct me if I'm wrong. But will you ensure that mines particularly completely internalize all water pollution remediation for an extended period, for as long as the water pollution that they cause or damage to the environment that they cause goes on, that is internalized within the cost of the mining operation?
Thank you very much.
Okay,
can you respond to
it? Thank you very much. I think that is essentially, maybe I can start in terms of the regulations. The guidelines that we have had, I think the guidelines that we have in terms of as far as the water is concerned, we are actually in the process of looking at updating them on the basis of the fact that they have, yes, best practice guidelines, on the basis that they have been timed where new developments come in. So we need to make sure that those are up to date and they are aligned. And I think, as you may know, Member Chair, that the current requirements of legislation is very clear about the issue of polluter pays principle within the context of even including issues of apportionment and all that. So it's very, very clear. And where we do have serious problems, as far as that point is concerned, is where you have got the legacy situation. That's where there are challenges. But in terms of new licenses and new developments, it is expected that funding for dealing with pollution is included. It's included in the licensing processes.
Chairperson.
Honourable.
Thank you. Chairperson, I just want to know about this Litsima project. I keep on listening to the department, because some of these projects, some of us, we don't even know. I don't know who are so special that are involved in this project, because really and truly, some of us, we know nothing, and we are so keen to know, because we are also representing people as we are sitting here from that democratic house.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Mazigalala. I'm always referring to Mazigalala. Can you respond to
it? Thank you. I'm not sure if that can actually be taken up with one of the managers directly involved with the project itself. We did report last time. I think the manager responsible for Lithima, who was here last time when we were here, was Debram Choti.
Yeah.
Today, I think there's somebody sitting up there, so I don't know if you should take it.
Mr. Treff, can one of your members write down the issue of Lithima, and you'll give response later, because I want to open up for presentation.
Good.
Please. Just write it down, then we'll come later, so that somebody can respond on the issue of Lithima. But not now. Is that comfortable? Are you okay, sir?
Yes, I've got you, Chair. No problem.
Okay. Honorable members, can I allow presenters to present from page 5 to page 6?
Sure.
Then we'll come up with questions, please.
Okay.
Can I give you a chance, please?
No problem.
So
we're talking now in terms of the issue of assisting water boards with money, money owed by the municipality. Is that the point?
Yes.
Yeah.
If there's a need there, we will get someone from the from up there to add whatever details that are required. But here, I think what we have indicated that it's correct that at the end of March 2010, the funds that were owed to water boards amounted to about 1.4 billion. When if you look at the table there, it will show you it's about 691 million rand, which is 49.5%, which was the current debt. The information that was there it's misleading to include the debt that is owed by the water municipalities or the water boards, because in reality the 90% of the debt is paid when it is due. So if you look at that table, you will see also that it has got a sort of age analysis as well to show the different amounts, the current amounts that are billed change on a change monthly due to sales of the sales volume, meaning that the total debt should increase with time due to inflation. The analysis of the debt owed by the water boards should therefore focus on the debt in terms of debt that is older than 30 days, and the numbers that you would have received there, which is not very clear, it also shows the percentages of those numbers there in terms of the debt that are 30 days or older. The table shows there in terms of the arrears that we have, 705 million rand, which is provided on the table. That shows, if you look at the table, it shows 30 days, 60 days, and over 120 days. So it's not the total amount, which is the 1.4 billion rand that is indicated there. The department itself has indicated in your report assist the water board with the debt owed to them by the municipalities through the mechanisms that are provided within the Municipal Finance Management Act. There has been successes in regards to, for example, with the Bushbuck Ridge, Sidibeng, Lipelle Water, and Geni Water. And Treasury has worked with these water boards as well as others in terms of the disputes around the payment of the debt. And partially resolve some of the payments that have been indicated there. We have indicated in the report that the issues relating to the state that water boards are disestablished because the debt owed by them incorrect in terms of stating that some water boards are being disestablished because of the debt owed by the municipality. The only water board that is under consideration for disestablishment is Namakwa, and I think we discussed that last time when we presented, due to sustainability issues that relate to the challenge and so on. The department has allocated a grant funding of 44 million rand. I think we've reported that before as well, over a three-year period to the water board for refurbishment, priority infrastructure, that is about 4 million rand, and in 1 year, 15 million rand in the school and 25 million rand over the 3 year period. So that is the report that we have at the moment. But if there are any details that we require to add on that, I will also call on my colleagues to explain that.
Thank you very much. Can we proceed to the
next
point? Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, really, there isn't much to say here except to say maybe give a little bit of background. Our relationship with SALGA has always been a very good one. We wouldn't have achieved many of the things that we've achieved if it wasn't for SALGA. Here, there was concern specifically around the manner in which SALGA see the department pursuing the whole issue of tariffs. And even though they are raising concerns and they are differing with us on certain aspects, which we are prepared to look into as a department, we're very impressed with the manner in which SALGA is clearly defining its role now as SALGA representing the interests of the municipalities, looking at these issues not only on a generic basis, but you know, bringing in their own expertise that's required to look at issues of this nature. But essentially, we are in discussion with SALGA in this process, and we, as you are also aware, there is a process that has, that maybe I should avoid saying a process, but we have been we've been given special instructions from the presidency to look at establishing an independent economic regulator. SALGA will be one of the key role players, there's no doubt about it. So this will be addressed.
Climate change?
Thank you very much. I think you have noted there that the issue in relation to the climate change, I will ask one of my colleagues at the in Pretoria there to give some information there on the climate change impact But what I can say at the present moment, I think we need to recognize the issue of South Africa's position in terms of water availability, and also the fact that we need to accept that we have a very dry country, so to speak, and bringing in the issue of climate change, we cannot afford but to look at this as part of a critical part of our planning activities. In terms of some of the specifics in relation to the mitigation strategies or adaptation that we are dealing with, I'll ask one of my colleagues to make a presentation on that.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Chair, can we get somebody who will outline issues related to climate change, please?
Chair, I will do so. I'm going to zoom in on Harrison Pinard, who will give you the climate change input. Harrison?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Just with regards to climate change, the Department is in the process of finalising its sector response strategy. A draft framework has been put in place, and this needs to be consulted with the wider sector. However, we are actively engaged with regards to the policy process that is led by the Department of Environmental Affairs, and it is still anticipated that within this financial year, that green paper will be tabled at Cabinet. As we speak, the team is engaging in a particular meeting now at Environmental Affairs as part of finalizing the green paper. But just with respect to the water sector response strategy itself, I think there's general agreement that adaptation and mitigation needs to be the cornerstone of such a response strategy, with adaptation issues likely going to be the predominant forms of intervention for the water sector. The response strategy also aims to understand risks and vulnerability and implication for ways in which demand and supply issues needs to balance in the overall water management system. Some institutional issues relate to interdepartmental cooperation with regards to CMA establishment and implementation of adaptation issues are also being captured as far as the response strategy is concerned. But it is, however, recognized that climate change has implications for future forced and investments in either existing infrastructure or the development of new infrastructure. Therefore, the implications needs to be quite rigorous in order for appropriate finances and investments to be mobilized. Early decisions now will save significant cost in the future, and the strategy consider both demand-side and supply-side measures in quite an integrated manner. The elements of the strategy also suggest that projected changes in climate change as they relate to water, and particularly with respect to water resources, looking at the impact and responses. The issue around the transboundary aspects of water resources are also been covered as far as climate change is concerned, since more than 50% of our water resources is indeed being shared with our neighboring countries. We also look at how users will be affected, and we've had a discussion earlier on with regards to drought management. It's also been linked to climate change as well, and also looking at security of supply in itself. We have, however, been informed by the policy team who's looking at the green paper that there needs to be clear alignment between the strategy development and the green paper itself. So we're actually running these in parallel at the moment as the two departments. But just already in our planning processes, the uncertainty of climate change have already been factored into our scenario planning. And in terms of the ecological requirements of water resources, we are also in the process of implementing these. And again, it's in response to climate change. Typically, when we talk about the raising of GMOs, it's also been perceived within that particular context of the climate change discussion. So we're trying to take stock in terms of what is already been happening, but a concerted effort is required through this response strategy that we are going to consult with the wider sector to ensure that climate change is indeed being dealt with in a rather comprehensive manner. We also have sector-specific recommendations, which was part of the Water for Growth and Development Framework, which again deals with adaptation and mitigation issues, and these are now being tailor-made with respect to this particular response strategy. Chairperson, that's all from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pinard. But Mr. Pinard, the information that we got from Mr. Pinard, we don't have here as members.
So I just think next time we'll be getting a full report before us. We've got only one sentence. I thought maybe we'll add or summarize this sentence. But it brought a very big report. But thank you for that. Can I get more additions from Pretoria? If there are anything that want to add on the report, please. Is there anything else? None? We continue.
Chair, the indication from my team here is that they don't have anything to add. If there are any questions, I'll respond to them, Chair.
Thank you very much, sir. Can I give to members to ask questions or input? Honourable members, no questions, no input. Can I proceed? Okay. Honourable Lovemore?
Chair, thank you very much. I've raised this question before as a parliamentary question. I didn't get a very definitive answer. In terms of water footprints, is this part of our climate change response? Are we encouraging, certainly within, starting with government departments, endeavouring to find out what the water footprint is and to reduce it, and also encouraging, and I hope, in fact, make legislating such that people have to, private enterprises to look at their water footprints.
Thank you,
Chair.
Water footprint?
Chair, I think we will have to give you a written response.
I think we will follow up on that, because there are a number of things that we are doing related to ensuring that even starting with the department itself, we look at it. Because part of water conservation is with programs.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that is.
Before you go, Mr. Treff, can we get a response on issues related to Litima before? Honourable Zigalala, leave this out.
Chairperson, I will do so. The key person for the SEMA, Deborah, is off sick, but we brought another face in to introduce you to you from the SEMA, and it's Ms. Ndangani Musekeni, who will talk to the issue. And I'm going to zoom in on to him in a moment. Won't you just grab that mic there, please? He's sitting right next to me on my right.
Thanks, go ahead.
Whoops. Okay, you're on.
Whoa.
There he is. Okay, go for it.
Okay. thanks for the question. My name is Ndangi Musekeni. I'm one of the members that are involved in Litima. Litima is a project that is looking at eradication of the water use license application backlog, which has been accumulating over time. Now we engaged in a project that is expediting finalization of this water use license applications and making decisions thereof.
If I could just, Chair, just ask Ndangini just to give us an indication of who the other members are on the team. I think Honourable Member Zikalala wants to know who the faces are behind this Litsima. So if you could just indicate who the other members are on the team.
Thank you.
Any roles and responsibilities?
Okay. Thank you, Trevor. In the Litsima project, mainly we have got DWA personnel comprising of members from the national office. We have got people that come from the all the regional office of DWA. We have also included some students for capacity building
so that when engaging in this project, we should have also built capacities so that there are other people that can actually do the work. We have got a group of specialists. We have got members of the different directorates in Dwa, the reserve determination staff. We have got the geohydrologist. We have got a group of civil designers, and a wide range of specialization is involved. Of course, we are also tackling the mining licenses as well, agriculture, local government in terms of wastewater treatment works, different industries that are involved, and well, also water licenses application for water used for domestic purposes.
Chair, I hope that just the thumbnail sketch addresses the question adequately. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Trev. In your interest from Pretoria, can we check, members? Are you covered?
Yes.
Okay. Can we go ahead with our program? We are going to be selective now on issues. We are going to ask a presenter on human resources and also on international share water courses agreement, if there is any opportunity for us. In Pretoria, can we get a presenter about human resource?
Chairperson, yes, I'm going to speak across to Vakalisa Bubele. Bubele Vakalisa, sorry, the acting DDG Corporate Services, and he will be assisted by Mark Ramsing. He is the HR Strategic Support Director, and they will respond to that that particular issue. And then when we come to the next one, I will introduce, on the IR, I will introduce DDG International Relations, Lindy Ware, to deal with that. But before I ask Mark Ramsing to come in, Honourable Chair, could I indulge and ask whether I can excuse the folk from the regional offices, if that is okay with you?
If you want to run short of staff members, yes, you can release them first.
Okay, thanks, Chair. I will release those who wish to go then. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Can I go ahead, Trevor?
Go ahead, please.
Okay. Thanks, Chair, and honorable members. The way we had prepared our presentation was in two phases, according to the question that was submitted. The first part was going to look at the skills audit plan, which is the part that is stated on page 7 of the summary that has been given to you. However, you have said that that part is clear. So the second part was about how to respond to recruitment issues, how to get the required skills, which is a part that is in page 8 and page 9. Mr. Mark Ramsing is going to speak on those and try to explain the detail that that accompanies that. There is a presentation that is much longer than this, from which we have sifted these two slides that you see on page 8 and page 9. And that presentation forms part of the annexure that is going to be part of the rest of the documentation. So Mark Ramsing, for the purposes of brevity, will only, instead of presenting the whole long presentation, will only take you through
these two slides. Over to you, Mark.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The statistical report reflected on page 8 was the intention to advise the committee on what the current vacancy rates are within the department, both numerical and statistical, and to give you a clear indication that in collaboration with line managers, we've come up with a targeted plan to be able to address the filling of these vacancies within a stipulated time frame. Focusing on page 9, during the recruitment process, the planned roadmap to fill those vacancies on the first column reflects the posts that already have been advertised per branch, and each post, the number of posts per branch. The targeted dates in the second column for date for finalization for both those advertised posts and the posts that have not been advertised are scheduled in collaboration with line management for 1st December for NWRI branch, corporate services 1 October 2010, office of the COO 1 October 2010, and right down through to the last date, which is 31st of January 2011 for international relations, and also indicating that we have committed to timelines of the recruitment cycle to improve turnaround times in ensuring that these skills are available by the stipulated time frame. The expected finalization date is the 31st of January 2011. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Honorable members, can we interact with this presentation if there are questions? Are you fine? Oh, thank you very much, sir. Honorable members are clear about everything that you presented now. Thank you very much, but it's too scientific. I thought maybe we'll interrogate it, because when you talk about numbers, you must know that you're talking about science now. Honorable members, I don't know, because we need to summarize what we're discussing. I'm tempted to stop presentation now, but I don't know, we'll just, what is that?
Number 10.
Yeah. But we'll just allow number 10 to be presented, and thereafter we'll summarize everything. That is International Share Water Courses Agreement. We'll present it. Sorry. Pretoria can present that.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I'm going to hand over to DDGIR, Lindy Mulasanga, who will do the presentation. The documentation is in the pack that was provided, but she will give you a high-level summary of the issues relating to transboundary or international shared watercourse agreements. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. And honorable members, I'm presenting on the International Shared Water Courses Agreement. First of all, we have, as a department, established the Shared Water Course institutions, such as the Orange Sengu River Commission, which we call ORATOCOM. That commission service, Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, and South Africa. And the second one is called Limpopo Water Course Commission, which we call LIMCO. That services Botswana, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, and South Africa. And the Tripartite Permanent Technical Committee, that services South Africa, Swaziland, and Mozambique. What is critical about this transboundary cooperation is that this is one way in which South Africa or the Department of Water Affairs contribute towards a better South Africa, in a better Africa, in a better world. And all of these transboundary shared water courses and agreements are enablers for us to be able to engage and deepen regional integration or contribute to the cause of deepening regional integration. Hence, we have the agreements that have been stipulated. Between Lesotho and ourselves, we have a Lesotho Treaty, which we've implemented phase one thereof, and we are in the process of implementing the phase two thereof. and the lead negotiator is Dr. Reuters, because there are issues that are related to the dams. And what is critical to note about this transboundary agreement is that there are enabling frameworks and the commissions that have been established to ensure that there's effective running of these the arrangements in a joint manner, and there's joint sharing of responsibilities, and including the funding of ensuring that these dams are built for us or for the region to benefit, and for the mutual benefit of both countries. The other agreement that we have is with Swaziland, between South Africa and Swaziland, and this is a recent agreement that we've signed between so that to give effect to the South Africa Pongola Port Dam to the Canal Shitilo, and this is led by Mr. Ndambo. Mr. Ndambo is the lead person, and also there are instruments and there are authorities that are running the running of that dam, which is jointly done by both countries for the benefit of the communities around those dams. So Mr. Mtambo can elaborate on that. We also have the Inkomaputo Agreement between South Africa, Swaziland, and Mozambique to implement the Komati River Development Project between South Africa and Swaziland, and also that relates to the Komati River, and also that also talks to the issues of irrigation, because we believe that a mutual benefit is very critical for the communities to benefit. And this is all in the spirit of SADC protocol, which says the SADC Regional Indicative Strategic Plan, which is very instructive in saying that our regional cooperation should seek to improve, at the end of the day, the lives of ordinary citizens. So we are hopeful that with these agreements and enablers, will be able in the long run to improve the lives of ordinary citizens using water. So the other one that we have is Namibia, South Africa on joint irrigation scheme. Yes, and then and also the one that is between Botswana and South Africa called the cross-border line water supply agreement, which was signed in July. That is what we call TSWASA agreement. So that is the high level stuff. What is critical is that we have instruments and the commissions that govern this, and it is done jointly by the countries for mutual benefit. And the lessons that we are learning is that the partners now, like in the Lesotho, are coming up with other proposals that seek to deepen further regional integration by looking beyond water. There are issues that are related to energy security, and also which will also benefit both countries and add to the energy mix that we are looking at, both as countries and individual as a region. So if there are questions, we have commissioners that are participating here, and the one that is also Limpopo, Mr. Matukana, will be who leads that, will give further details in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation.
Chair, we'll take the lead from you. I don't know if you want Elson Matukane and Fanyan to, sorry, just put your mic off, Linda.
Can they quickly get in?
Okay, I will do some. Coming to Matukane first. Okay, Elson, go.
Thank you, Chair. Just to elaborate on the...
If you want to.
The agreement we have with Botswana, the TSWASA agreement, and the other general one. The TSWASA agreement is actually an update of an old agreement where the South Africa supplies water to the capital of Botswana, Gaborone, while the other one, it has to do with the general water supply between the two countries. The first benefit we are going to get quite soon is that the Botswana is currently completing a dam on the Sashe River, which is a tributary of the Limpopo. The Sashe River is much larger than the Limpopo. From that dam, we'll then be able to have a secured water supply, especially during the dry times in the area of Musina and also Mozambique. That's the first benefit we're going to get. The second agreement, which is for the LUCOM, the four countries in the Limpopo Basin, Zimbabwe, Botswana, South Africa, and Mozambique, has been ratified by only three countries, South Africa, Botswana, and Mozambique. We are currently waiting for Zimbabwe to ratify that agreement. It's a much larger agreement, and it's one which will help us in negotiating for a good share and security of water in the Limpopo Basin. Thank you, Chair.
Bring Mr. Mtambo in now. Thank you, Chair. The Inkomaputo agreement actually plays a vital role in terms of supplying water to Mozambique. Okay. I was looking at this. In terms of supplying water to Mozambique. Now, we are responsible of ensuring that 2 million cubic meters do cross to Mozambique on a daily basis. This is done through our agent, which is the Komati Basin Water Authority, that operates the dam in South Africa, Trikopis Dam, and the dam in Swaziland, which is Makuka Dam. And this agent is being governed by the commissioners which were appointed to our minister in South Africa and the minister in Swaziland, where it's called the Swaziland Joint Water Cooperation, whereby it has been applauded in one of the shared water causes meetings that it was one of the best working shared water cause example. Also in Mozambique, we've got a similar structure where also commissioners in South Africa meet with commissioners in Mozambique in terms of looking at ways how we can assist in developing also in water infrastructure in Mozambique. Now, what the recent agreement that was signed by the minister was an agreement of supplying water to a particular area close to the border of South Africa in Sitilo in Swaziland, around the area of Lavumisa. Now, what has happened in that area is that there is water being taken through a canal. Now, that canal is under Impala Water Use Association. So Impala could not enter the agreement, but our minister, as the custodian of the water, had to enter into a cooperative agreement that then allowed the agency, which is Impala Water Use Association, to engage with the municipality of Sitilo in Swaziland. Basically, those were the three agreements that has taken place. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Chair.
Could I indulge you and just ask if I could just swing back on to Dr. Reuters, that he can just talk quickly to the arrangements with the Lesotho Islands Phase 2.
Very quick.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not going to take long, Chairperson, because we have to come back to Parliament and to inform you. Look, the Phase 2 Lesotho Highlands water is going to consist of a two-pronged approach, Chairperson. One is water security for South Africa in terms of the construction of the Polihari Dam of 165 meters. It will have the storage capacity of about 287 million cubic meters of water. We have to augment the valve system by
sorry for interruption, Dr. Reuters.
Yeah.
Where is your report? We don't have the report for us. Where is your report?
We also have the report, Chairperson, but we said it's just part of what Lindiwe was referred to. But we will come to Parliament with the agreement. There's a draft agreement at the moment on the table between South Africa and Lesotho. There was a statement of intent that was signed with the State President's visit to the Kingdom of Lesotho by our Minister and the Minister of Natural Resources in Lesotho. So. It's a clarification on the Lesotho Treaty that I'm just giving you this quick background. And the phase two will then further augment the whole system supply. We're supplying six provinces out of the whole valve system, and we will start with the construction of the phase two plus minus towards the beginning of 2012 2013.
And then the second component is about the energy security for Lesotho, and also that we're going to benefit from that. But obviously, we will share with you in terms of the broader context of the treaty in terms of its when it's completed. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Prof. Can I allow the members to pose questions if there is any?
They will come and brief us more so that we must understand what is all about this treaty, what are we benefiting, what is that dam in Shashe, so that we must know if there is a dam that will benefit also as South Africa. I think we will be waiting for the report.
Thank you very much. Members will be waiting for a report, especially from Dr. Treff, sorry, Dr. Reiter, to supplement this information before maybe we can interact it. Thank you very much for your presentation. Members, is there anything that you want to say in order to summarize what we're dealing with here since early in the morning? In terms of resolution, is there anything maybe that you want to say before we summarize that?
Chairperson, from my side, I would really appreciate what the department is doing right now, because to me it says they had us, and now they are trying to implement what is required from them. Water is life, and without water, there's no life. So let us be practical and be visible on the ground. People are suffering. People don't have water, and there's no way that we can allow people to drink water from the same well with animals. For Mr. Matukana is not a public speaker. An engineer, mm-hmm. And next time when he presents, please, he should not be. You know, he's not a public speaker, and I pity him. And otherwise, thanks for the presentation.
Honorable Mangai.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Department, they have also gone deep down, and then they have also looked at the shortage of skills in the municipality. They know now when we talk about water, they know where to go and where not to go. Because in the past, we were just talking and saying, shortage of skills. I think now they have come up with something that is tangible. We know, and then we appreciate that there will be the pagan people bazaar, so that we must get those scarce skills. So that since we came here, shortage of skills, at least today we have something that we can say in what all ever that we have been saying, at least we have done 1, 2, 3. And then I also thank you very much for the presentation, because as politicians we pronounce, and then we are the one who have to implement. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member Mangani. Can I give it to DG before I summarize everything?
Thank you very much for the opportunity. We appreciate the kind words from the members. We're trying our best. We also understand your frustrations. Your frustrations are also our frustrations, especially when it comes to service delivery, where things are just not working at a local level. But we are one government. I think fundamentally we are one government, even though sometimes the legislation say is clear about roles and responsibilities. Sometimes the situation in the interest of communities demands that we go outside our mandate as a department. But we appreciate our support and guidance going forward.
Thank you very much, Acting DG. I should think we need not to close out Mr. Trevor as he was marshalling our members at Pretoria. Can I give you an opportunity just to say a few words, Mr. Treff, because you were marshalling your forces since early this morning until now. Okay, over to you, Mr. Treff.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think what I would like to do is just to do an observation, which is really on the way the meeting has panned out. I think the use of technology today has certainly helped us from this side to be able to marshal a lot more people to come in and respond to some of the questions directly.
and given under the understanding, hopefully convey a feeling that there is a deeper understanding of the issues out there. And I would just thank you for that, for indulging us with the ability to use a video link. And we would wait your instructions with regard to the two areas which we haven't covered, which was the one under infrastructure and the Chief Operations Officer report on the legislation. So we'll await your instructions in that regard. But thanks for the way we've been able to interact as well.
Thank you very much, DG, honorable members, for having such a successful meeting since early in the morning until now. But what I'd like to say is we want all outstanding reports to come to us here so that we can read those reports and interrogate them and ask questions where it is necessary. Mr. Trev, we are going to communicate with this technology system, as you are saying, but some of your members there, but we'll be very much selective. We'll call them to come physically to us on a number of issues, because there are issues that need face-to-face, in fact, interaction, so that we can make sure that we iron them up. But I congratulate all these regional heads. At least they are doing something. We will see where we are going now, and we'll always supporting them as a committee. And you, Trevor, and your entourage, DG, thank you very much for coming over this side and work with us. Let's continue and deliver services as expected to our people. Thank you very much. The meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mama. Yeah, it's too late. That's right. Mama,
Not necessarily within that context. You know, just send the information. Because, yeah, maybe we can tell you the technical. There is something that we put on the comments.